It's time for Twig This Week in Google. We got a great panel for you. Stacy has the week off, but Aaron Newcomb is here. We've got Mike Elgin and Jeff Jarvis visiting us from Australia. It's early in the morning there. We're going to talk about the latest news from Google. Actually, we've got Facebook's earnings. They came in just during the show. You won't believe your ears. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 415, recorded Wednesday, July 26th, 2017. Sinkhole ahead. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. And by LegalZoom. Prepare for your family's future with an estate plan from LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter Twig at checkout for special savings. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and entering the promo code TWIG. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from Google, Facebook, media, whatever we want to talk about. Jeff Jarvis is here. He's all the way. It's early in the morning. He's all the way from Australia in Sydney. Wake up, Jeff. Wake up. Wake up. He's at the, where are you?
The University of Technology, Sydney.
Nice.
My friend Peter Frey's office. I'm over here for the, I've been here the whole week yabbing. But
unfortunately, that means you're probably on Australian time by now.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which means it's really early in the morning. Otherwise, it'd be evening. That's just
right.
It's just not hard. Yeah, it's so hard.
And it's tomorrow. I'm telling you, Thursday's bad. You don't want to stay in Wednesday.
It's every day's been getting worse and worse. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Great to have you, Jeff Jarvis, also joining us back after his stunning show on Sunday. Mike Elgin from gastronomad.net. He is. We're so glad we have you in the country for a little while.
I'm glad to be in the country.
Yeah, I
enjoy this granddaughter. Country very much. Yeah. And it was a stunning show. I think I was stunned the entire time.
That was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah. And yeah, it's I was in France and Southern Europe, and it's just like right here, Sonoma County. The climate is almost
identical. It is, isn't it? Yeah.
It's just like Sonoma, but with castles and stuff.
And
like
French
that.
Yeah. People.
History and culture.
Yeah. We're going there next 2 months in September. I can't wait. Yeah. And actually, if you're interested in going somewhere, Mike and Amira, his wife, are doing an amazing event in Barcelona coming up September 12th.
I believe that's right. If you go to gastronomad.net, you can get the exact, if that's not it. I'm pretty
sure
that's it.
Spend a week with them cooking, baking bread, the best baker in Spain.
That's right. I stand behind that statement.
That's
that
awesome.
Yes.
What is Spanish bread any different than French bread, say, or Italian bread?
It has lots of regional varieties, many of which are not generally available. But there's also a pan-European bread culture. And so this baker participates in both. So it's kind of French, kind of Spanish.
Lovely.
Really good bread.
Yeah, and you're a good – I don't know if people know, but Mike's an amazing baker. He really inspired me to do more baking.
Thank you. And I'm obsessed with bread. I'm very,
I follow you on the Google Plus bread community.
Yes. The art of bread.
the art of bread. It's a wonderful, if you don't mind the carbs, highly recommend the art of bread. Hey, look who else is here. Aaron Newcomb is here. Hello, Aaron. Great to see you.
Yeah, it's been back. I don't know how long it's been. Boy, it seems like forever.
Well, where are you working these days?
Yeah, so I'm at New Relic, which is part of the reason I haven't been able to join as often as I'd like to.
We use New Relic.
Yeah, it's great software. If anybody needs application monitoring software, you should really check it out. Or even infrastructure monitoring, which is what I joined to help them develop, is their infrastructure monitoring platform. So, it's just busy as all get out here, as my dad would say. and so they don't give me much time, but I try to get on channels as often as I can on Floss Weekly twice in a row. The past couple of weeks. So go back out and take a look at Floss Weekly if you missed those episodes.
Yeah, we use New Relic to monitor the twit.tv website. From day
one.
You can
monitor websites, applications, your hosts.
It's,
makes it really easy. The thing that I love about it is you can really dive in if you're a data nerd. In fact, the people behind me, I don't know if you can see them walking back and forth. Those are our data scientists.
I love data.
They're constantly digging in and trying to find insights and all the data we collect. So it's pretty cool.
Amazing, so good news for you, Jeff. The Chromebook rumors are starting. The rumor mill's starting to pound. Chromebook Eve, which we've been seeing in the OS commits, Chrome OS commits since last October, seems to be getting closer and closer. This would be, if it is what people think it is, a replacement for this Google Pixel, which we're all desperate to get. The Pixel has kind of run through its end of life at this point.
Has I lugged mine here so I could do the show, and I love it dearly, but it's I'm waiting for the
it
next
would
thing.
Be running the current seventh generation Kaby Lake processor from Intel. That's one of the things Google did with its Pixel. It ran i5 processors and i3 processors. And there's another thing that's kind of interesting that is actually a larger story, which is that Google may be eliminating the I don't want to say it out loud. Okay, Google. Features from the Chromebook, you know, where you invoke Google Assistant. Actually, it's not Google Assistant. It's Google something.
Something, voice search or whatever it
seems
it is.
Like it's Assistant.
See, this is the confusion that is the problem. And so I think they're heading toward, hopefully, a thing that when you talk to any Google thing, you know you're talking to the Assistant. And that would be very nice. That's essentially what Apple does with Siri. There's only one A word at Amazon, even though that's widely distributed.
Right.
And so when you get to Google, it's always been, is it Google Now? Is it this? Right. Is it that? And they really need to centralize it. I think it's a good thing. It's mostly branding.
So the other rumor is, at least according to code in the OS repository, there will be a dedicated assistant key, which I like. I mean, I have it on Bixby, but who wants to talk to Bixby, right?
Nobody.
On the Samsung Galaxy.
You mean as a keyword?
No, a key, a physical like button that you'd press to say and now and then start talking. So I like that because I think a lot of times you feel kind of dopey saying "Okay, Goog," and then talking.
So
I like.
Can
that
you idea. Also can you also say "Okay, you know who"?
This is what I'm reading from an article in Laptop Magazine, but I think that they may be quoting Chrome Unboxed, which is a Chromebook, Chrome OS blog.
Right.
They say that the code in the repository suggests Google plans to deprecate OK Google functionality. Now, I'm not sure if that's in only Chrome OS. I mean, that's what they know, but I wonder if Google might even be doing it in a more global way. I don't know.
And I suspect they will. What they really should do, what I'd really love to see Google do, and they probably won't do it, but they should have another hardware product, which would be earbuds, be hearables.
I know you're a big fan of Apple's earbuds.
Big fan of them. Yeah. But the way Google should work is that should automatically connect to whichever device is nearby that it already has permissions to connect. And then when you talk to the Google Assistant, you can just do that. You can just talk. It'll be like the A word from Amazon, the Echo. And that would be killer because we're moving to a world where we just talk, be like Star Trek, and our virtual assistant talks back. And other companies, namely Amazon and Apple, are starting to take over that space, even though Google had the best assistant first. And I'd love to see them get back into it with more hardware like the Home. But also like these AirPods. Apple AirPods are wonderful.
The only way problem they is work that Siri is you double tap them to get Siri to listen.
Yes.
And that is hit or miss, I think.
It is. It's problematic.
It also hurts your ear.
Yeah. I'd like to have it be keyword triggered. I think that would be perfectly fine. Or maybe have an user setting that you could do one or the other. Either way, we're going to the world where we just talk and something whispers in our ear. Let's get there. Let's hurry up and get there.
There is a wake on voice capability that is in the Chromebook Eve repository. So, but I think key mapping So I decided to read the original article by Gabriel Brangers in Chrome Unboxed, chromeunboxed.com. So this would be the first time a Google Assistant is on a Chrome OS device, and again, distinguishing it from Google Search, voice search.
Yeah.
He says, we've been tracking the new Chromebook E for some time now, and the longer we do, the more intriguing it becomes. So he's mentioning this. And here's the snippet, special keyboard mapping for Eve project. The keyboard has an extra assistant key. The commit looks to add key mapping for some combination of the 8 key and another key yet to be discovered. The wake on voice capability has been added to Chromebook Eve. So it does, I guess, still wake on voice.
Okay.
But see, that's why I'm puzzled, because the article that I was reading in Laptop Magazine said they were going to deprecate. I guess they're deprecating OK.
Yeah.
You know who.
You know who. But they could do, yeah.
I agree with you.
They're switching.
You have to have a trigger of some kind, whether it's a button or a voice. But I love it. I love the Moto X where you could say whatever you wanted. I thought that was much better. It's more secure, obviously, because people don't necessarily know your passphrase.
The problem with the Moto X, is that you'd have to take it out of your pocket. I mean, this is first world problems. You have to take it out of your pocket.
Right.
What would be ideal would be to have a Chromebook closed in your backpack or sitting in the seat next to you in the car.
Powering those earbuds.
Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah.
I would like that.
Okay.
I mean, they do have the technology almost there, right? I mean, I know when I'm sitting at home and I've got my phone out and I've got Google Home in the same room and I say the trigger word and ask it a question, they both hear me.
Yes.
And it'll say answering on another device.
It always seems to answer when you're on the phone. It'll wake up the phone, but it always seems to answer on the home, right?
It's like it has a built-in preference in the software.
Yeah. On the Amazon Echo, because it has those beam-forming array mics, it knows what you're closest to. So I almost always wake up multiple Echoes when I say it because I have a booming voice. But the one that answers me is always the one nearest me.
Huh.
And that's how it should
be. Mike, there's one other thing you need, though. For that laptop in your backpack, you need a cellular connectivity on it.
Oh, yeah. You definitely need that.
And that's sure. I miss that so much from the first Pixel. I would kill for that. And the same with my Pixel C.
Yep.
By the way, Mike is you're not. I keep making that mistake. You're using an iPad. It looks like you're using a Pixel C, but it's not. It's an iPad.
That's right.
He is using a tablet like you do, Jeff.
Yeah. And I have the SIM card in there, so I have data, and it's unlimited data plan, so I'm that's heaven. That's you got to have that.
If you're going to be a nomad,
absolutely.
Does it work overseas?
I have to get a SIM card at the local.
But then it does.
But then it does.
Yeah. I think that's a special case, because I think the reason they stopped putting it in is because everybody already is paying for data on their phone, and nowadays almost everybody has the ability to hotspot from their phone. And so now, admittedly, it's not as fast.
That's a matter of the business model. What you should be able to do is connect all your SIMs in one account.
Yep. Yes.
Right? And just have it take from the same pool. If you can do that among family members, why can't you do that among devices?
Exactly. You can, actually. AT&T, if you buy the new Android 2 watch, you have a choice of having its own phone number and its own SIM, or using an app on your phone to use data from the I'm not sure how it works, but I gather that it's a handoff, data handoff.
Well, Google's Project Fi, you get your main account, and then you can get up to 10, I think, additional SIM cards.
I keep meaning to do that. That would be on the Fi account.
Oh. It's on the same. The problem is it's not cheap anymore. When they first came out, it was like, oh, my gosh, look at these prices. But now there's all these unlimited things, and deals have gotten much better. And now Google Fi is kind of on the pricey side. You keep using a lot of data, you're going to pay for all that data. It's in a way, it's kind of a...
Boy, it's Mike, isn't it the best thing abroad? I love it.
Yes, and I don't live abroad like
you do, but when I go abroad, Fi is just great.
So can I shop on the Fi store? Where would I do that? Manage plan, maybe? Because I've got... Apparently, I have 5 devices, which I didn't know about. Wait a minute. That can't be right. Are people buying SIM cards on my account? 5 devices.
Your monthly cost says $70.
Oh, these are old devices. Yeah. Okay, so here's where you do it. I get it. So I should probably get rid of these inactive devices. These are old Nexus 6. the old Pixel.
You could employ a full-time person just getting rid of your inactive devices.
I have so much that I should just...
A separate person just for Amazon.
So add a data-only SIM using any compatible device or try to data coverage. And that's the same $10 a month.
Yeah.
$10 a gigabyte, I should say.
Right.
And then they, what do they charge you to get a SIM?
Oh. Nothing. It's free. They'll just send you a free SIM. They'll send you several free SIMs. They want you to use data. You know,
yeah.
Think about it. And sure. the best thing about Google Fi is the clarity in the pricing model. So if I'm going to be in the U.S. for 3 months, I just pause service for 3 months and they charge me nothing during those months. And then when I'm going to go abroad again, I just reactivate it. Half an hour later, I'm on the network in the foreign country and it works really great. The only problem is that I use way too much data for this plan. I ran up a bill of like $100 in a couple of hours. Recently. And
yeah, I signed up for Google Fi recently and I work on the ferry now back and forth to work in the morning, the afternoon.
Oh, it works? So, like even when you're in the bay in the middle?
It's spotty, but I can get a connection. That's the reason I got Fi was because it will jump around from tower to tower, right?
Sprint A and T-Mobile and Wi-Fi. So it'll find the best if it can find anything. Yeah.
So I figured I'd try it out. Unfortunately, I'm using about 7 gig a month. So I think I'm going to go back to T-Mobile's one plan, their unlimited plan, because I just
that's
can't.
That's the cutoff.
Right I can't there. Justify
that's
it.
That's the cutoff, because you have to pay $20 for voice and text, and then $10 per gigabyte. So you're paying $90 now, whereas you could go to a T-Mobile $70 or $80 plan.
Exactly.
So you're right at the
now, cutoff. If Google can somehow take Google Fi and make it unlimited, that would be...
Yep.
Forget about it. There would be no other.
That'd be killer.
Yeah. By the way, there is a Google Fi referral challenge. So we can all fight over which Fi code. who's Google Fi code? I think all four of us use Fi. That's interesting. Yeah. Of course, it is this week in Google. But So I guess the reason I bring this up is because Jeff is desperate for a new Pixel.
Yes.
And it sounds like this Eve will be the Chromebook to get. Whenever it comes out, it's got to be fairly close.
Yeah, because the Samsung Pro and the Asus C302 are good, but they're only 4 gigs onboard memory.
You want an 8 gig machine. You want an i5 processor.
I want
touch screen, good screen. This the screen will be 3.2, according. This is all stuff gleaned from the. The Chrome OS repository. There's something in the, it's called double click. I don't know what that is. This is from Laptop Magazine. The third more perplexing rumor that Google Chrome Unbox uncovered is it can respond to a double tap similar to the Chromebook Pixel.
On the external, when it's closed, you can double tap on the case.
Oh, right.
See the
that wakes up that LED.
So it could
do
other things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could do other things.
It's unclear what this will do, but Eve apparently doesn't have a light bar like the Pixel C does. Commits refer to some LEDs, but we don't know what they'll do. So that's interesting. So this is the code repository for Chrome OS. And as new devices come out, they start to add code to specific to those devices. And that's what, since it's open source, that's what these guys are looking at. Other rumors, fingerprint reader, like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
2400 by 1600 touchscreen display. That's good. That's 3x2, which the current one is.
Yep.
Is that right? Yeah, 3x2. Yep. So it sounds like a good, sounds like something to wait for, Jeff. If I'm going to be a betting man, what do you guys think? The current rumor, we're back in the rumor sphere again, but the current rumor is the Pixel will be, next Pixel will be announced in October after Apple's event.
Yeah.
Not before. So. That's only a few months off. That would be a logical time to announce one or two new phones and a new Chromebook. It's a little late for back to school, though. If you wanted to get back to school, you'd want to do it now.
Yeah. But I'm not sure the schools, that's not a device for schools.
It's too high-end.
It's too high-end. Yeah. The rest of the Chrome OS
the cheaper
device.
Ones.
Yeah. And that's a whole benefit.
I bought Michael Zennering is going to be a freshman in high school. I bought him the Samsung Chromebook Plus, which I really like.
Yeah.
That's a really nice, lightweight, powerful, but easy to use machine.
Right.
But, okay. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about a lot of new things from Google. Was busy this week.
Yeah.
SOS in Maps and Search. This International Space Station. You can now tour it in Street View. And a lot more, I think.
And much, much more.
Much, much more, which I haven't found yet. But I will find before this ad is over. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If you're buying a house, you got some money and you're writing a check, chances are good, or bringing a briefcase full of cash, you're going to get a mortgage. You're going to get a home loan. Everybody does. But not all home loans are created equal, and certainly not all mortgage lenders are created equal. I want to encourage you to go to Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the business. That's why year after year they win those great J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards. And they like geeks because they've created a brand new service, a completely online mortgage approval process called Rocket Mortgage. It's awesome. First of all, you can do it all on your phone. You could do it. It's so fast you could do it at an open house and get approval before you leave. But you may say, but Leo, don't we have to fax them documents or hand carry our banker's box full of check stubs and pay statements and bank statements? Don't we have to? No, you don't, because Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans is paired with all of the big financial institutions, so they can just automatically send them to Quicken Loans. Give them all the information they need. Just, you know, all you have to do is say, yes, do that, do that, do that. And then within minutes, they will chomp the numbers. And based on your income, your assets, and your credit, they can give you exactly the home loan that's right for you. You can choose the rate and term, of course. It's flexible, but it's transparent. You'll know how it's working. You'll know what's going on. And you can be confident you're getting the best loan for you. Rocket Mortgage is here to lift the burden of getting a home loan. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. Rocketmortgage.com/twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states and MLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And of course, if you go to rocketmortgage.com/twig, they'll know you heard it here, which is good for us. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. We thank them so much for the support of This Week in Google. What was the YouTube boycott? It says your YouTube ad boycott had minimal impact. Well, I didn't even know it was happening, so maybe
that's why.
Maybe I. So let's see here. This is Google. YouTube boycott has minimal impact. This is This is part of the report on Google's quarterly results. Of course, a very big quarter. Net income was down 28%. They still made $3.5 billion. The reason it was down is because they paid I don't think they've paid it yet because they're appealing it.
Yeah.
But they took a loss of $2.7 billion for the antitrust fine they got from the EC.
You know, the
that's nice if you make so much money that you could pay a $2.7 billion fine and still make $3.5 billion.
They just write it off.
Just write it off.
The funny thing is that the amount that Europe fined, that was a record fine, obviously. Just keeps it like doubles every 18th month. It's like the European Moore's Law.
That's not good.
That's not good. So the next one will be in 18 months and it'll be.
Is that built into the law that it keeps going up, or that's just the way it works?
No, okay. I just think that they keep noticing how deep Google's pockets are.
That's really like,
let's go get some more.
Well,
we got money.
They got plenty left over.
Yeah.
Search and display advertising revenue grew by 20% to $18.4 billion. $18.4 billion in revenue, $3.5 billion in profit.
It's good work if you can get it, Leo.
I didn't know this, but there was a YouTube brand safety boycott earlier this year. What was that? Apparently,
that was major advertisers. That was Guardian, BBC, Havas, and others. Pulled back their ads from YouTube because of being next to bad stuff.
Oh.
And in the financials, it had no impact. Right. Google responded quickly, and Google needed to, because otherwise others could have left if they weren't responsive. So it did have an impact on their actions. It just didn't have an impact on their bottom line.
Wow. Cost per click, this might be a cause for concern. Cost per click down 26% on Google properties, 11% on Display Network member sites. But paid clicks increased by 61%. That's why their overall revenue went up, even though the cost went down. Maybe that's part of the deal, is the cost goes down, but they continue to grow the market.
Yeah.
9% increase in paid clicks on Google Display. Google paid out $3 billion to network members. That's up 15% year over year. So I guess you'd say the ad – Jeff, I'll defer to you on this, but I guess you'd say the ad market is
it is, but one has to wonder whether the ad market starts to collapse at some point. Is there a point at which
– can't get any bigger.
They're just – yeah. A, it can't get any bigger. B, there's so many other ways that people buy things. Google and Facebook.
We see this in podcast revenues because there's so many more podcasts now. Yeah. Even though the pie is growing, the slices are getting smaller because there's so many different podcast companies. It's roughly an equal. I think we're probably down maybe 10% this year. It's the first year we'd be down ever.
Yeah.
But I think that that's because there's just so much competition.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably the same thing in Google's sphere.
And there are a huge number of podcasts that are just too small to make a penny
Right, yeah. And so but they know that, I hope.
But that also has the sort of invisible effect of just kind of subtly draining away people's time, you know, away from...
They're listening to them, right.
Exactly.
So that, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
They have small audiences.
Everybody has a limited amount of time that they can pay attention to stuff like this. Yeah.
And even though this isn't related to podcasts, it's related to advertising in general, but programmatic advertising, these marketplaces, these trading floors,
they depress prices
instantaneous
as well,
competition.
Right? Yeah.
And that depresses prices considerably. It commodifies media, so that has an impact on media as a whole. Now, podcasts should stand out from that because you can't just place any old generic ad anywhere.
Well, by the way, there's moves to do that in podcasts, too, with insertion.
Yep. Oh.
We will never do that because I don't believe... Well, I can't say we'll never do it, but I would prefer not to do it. I don't believe in that. I think that you're exactly right, Jeff. That's what differentiates our advertising from just run-of-the-mill media, but... there's lots of pressure from advertisers. Well,
I also think it's an opportunity. The way that you do ads on this network is kind of it's a respite. So as the outside world where the advertisements get more and more intrusive, you know, automatically running video, all this noise and just irritating ads in your face all the time, it's nice to go to the Twit network and hear ads that the way you do them.
Well, we're just kind of conversational.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Advertising that works. It's
well, it's, I, you know, I don't want to make it all about us, but I do think that there's a now that podcasting is having a renaissance, which always makes me laugh because we've been here 12 years. But now that there's a renaissance of podcasting, and the media world, particularly New York, is sitting up and taking notice because there's a lot of podcasts coming out of media in New York.
Yeah,
there's a lot of pressure. There's more money in it, but there's also a lot of pressure to kind of conform to other media. People want it to work the same way it works in radio and TV.
Right.
So there's upfronts now. They're looking at insertion. They're looking at terms from the IAB, the Interactive Advertising Bureau, that are less favorable to podcasters, more favorable to advertisers. So we knew this was coming. I kind of like I always liked the days when podcasting was kind of the little lesser known cousin of mainstream media. Yeah. Nobody really knew what about us.
Right.
It's not like that anymore. Everybody knows about podcasts now. So it's changing.
Half the podcasts were yours.
Like you can stand out.
Those were the days when I was the only podcaster. I had a monopoly on a tiny, tiny... I'd rather be a big fish in a little pond. I admit it. Shrink that pond down.
Drain the swamp.
Or something.
Something.
Let's see. So good news for, I would say, overall for Google, less money per click. They have this very similar, isn't it? Less money per click, but the pond is growing bigger. So that makes up for it. Clicks on its ads, according to Alphabet, surged 52%. Wow, more clicks. Wow. What does that mean? Does it mean advertisers are getting savvier about making ads that work? I think it might have something to do with better targeting. Because everybody hates ad targeting, right, Aaron? Everybody says, oh, don't track me, bro. But at the same time, I would far prefer to see ads for products I'm interested in than ads for stuff I have no interest in. Why waste my time?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, you know, fewer clicks, or if you earn less for each click, but you're more productive in those in presenting what people want, that's okay, right? So you're trading the high dollar amount for the volume in that case,
right?
And people are happier. So
The other thing that's happening is there's the distribution of advertising is becoming sort of going underground and becoming more subtle. And what I mean by that is that the rise in experiential marketing means that marketers and advertisers are not actually creating content. What they're doing is they're creating Instagrammable experiences, and then consumers are Instagramming them, and they're creating the content, and they're distributing the content on social. And that's kind of like this weird new world where, like, how do you measure it? How do you control, you know? And so you don't know how much of those sort of ad budgets are being drained off from advertising, which you can measure clicks and all that stuff, into this experiential marketing universe, which again, with augmented reality, is just going to be a huge form of marketing.
Great article today in BuzzFeed by Alex Kantrowitz, who's talking about how money is going away from buying ads and instead it's going to promoting favorable news coverage. And this is exactly what you're talking about.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
and that's good marketing, right? Promote a positive review of your product. Right. That's better than an ad.
Oh, yeah. Much better.
But once again, the content creators
Mashable
are the users.
Mashable didn't make any money on that. Why didn't Mashable get clicks?
Let's see. Yeah, that's interesting. So here's the example. Mashable wrote a positive review of an app called Blind. What Blind did is buy on Facebook, see suggested post, links, not to an ad in effect, but to the Mashable review. And, of course, Mashable doesn't get any of that money. It all goes to Facebook, but Mashable...
No, if you click on the article, Leo, you would go to the Mashable review, right, and they'd get more traffic.
It says the post drove more than 11,000 visits to the app download page, which was, I guess, linked. Mashable, which sells advertising to companies like Blind, didn't see a dime. Not that way. In other words, Blind didn't buy an ad on Mashable
directly.
But it benefits Mashable. And this is instead of buying a normal ad on Facebook. So I think this is beneficial to everybody. Facebook still gets the same amount of money. Blind gets better promotion. And Mashable, which wouldn't have gotten any money from an ad, gets some traffic.
Here's the dark side. The dark side is that the people who work at Mashable, young kids out of college writing these articles, are now have a massive incentive to write positive reviews so that they will get traffic. Now, in order to get traffic, it's not about clickbait. It's about sucking up to Microsoft, sucking up to other companies so that they link to you and you can go to your editor and say, look at all the traffic I'm generating with my articles.
And, like it's back to pay-per-post.
Yeah.
It's like pay-per-post.
And as this BuzzFeed article points out, advertisers are going to send – Facebook wins because advertisers will send money to Facebook instead of to Mashable.
Facebook
for an
always
ad on Mashable.
Wins.
Facebook wins anyway.
Yes.
That Casper did this. Now, I guess it would affect us as well, right? Casper repurposed a BBC story as a Facebook ad promoting its product.
Mm-hmm.
A local plumbing company in Texas used a Dallas Morning News article about a water main break to promote its service.
Yep.
Facebook itself recently promoted an Ad Age article to hype its video offering. So here's a sponsored post, Facebook Business, which links to Ad Age. Facebook has a message for marketers ahead of Cannes. All digital is not the same.
You know, and this is one of those things, like for a while every time there's a new type of controversial ad format, everybody tries it. Native advertising like came and didn't quite go again, but it's like it became a thing everybody was trying to see if it was a good fit. I hope this experiment fails for everybody because this is.
I don't think it will. I think native failed because it felt skeezy. It felt like it was a trick, right?
Yeah.
But this is clearly an ad, and it's linking to a legitimate article. Though that's going to be the question. I agree that maybe this article will become over time. This will suborn the best intentions of these publications. But at least for now, pushes
here's
to
the danger, Leo.
Yeah,
right. So we have a Casper ad here. If somebody else writes. If Jason Calacanis writes a glowing Casper review, just knowing he's going to screw you, do they stop advertising with you?
No. Well, yeah, they
does
might.
Facebook
so
get that,
so what could happen Facebook is Facebook could Casper could buy an ad on Facebook pushing to Calacanis' article. But that's not Calacanis' fault. And it's a different kind of
thing. I'm making a Jason joke is all.
I know.
But what I'm saying is, does this change advertising such that they stop buying advertising?
So again,
instead they do this.
Right. And this might incent a whole new demand media style business where people write positive articles. Mm-hmm. But see, I don't think that that's it, because again, that's going to look skeezy, because there's going to be people, you got to push to a legitimate source of this positive review. Yes. Or it's just junk. Yeah,
but left in the dust is the legitimate article that was critical. And so
true.
It skews the favorability. It also skews the algorithms, because Facebook said, oh, everybody's linking to this article.
And what did you do? So when you were running Windows Magazine, if you had a positive review of a product, would the product come to you and say, can we put that, a link to that on our webpage? That would...
Well, when I started Windows Magazine, there was no web.
or in a newspaper ad.
Yeah,
or,
if people, I mean, it's free speech issue. They can
Windows,
do whatever they want.
Windows
yeah.
Magazine gives it five yeah. stars. You can't, or Siskel and Ebert say two thumbs up. You can't stop that,
exactly.
right?
Exactly, and we wouldn't try. And they would even put that stuff in ads that appeared in Windows Magazine, and that was fine.
At least you got some revenue. But we get asked that all the time. Can yeah. we use... So let's say we do a segment. This now I realize what's going on. We'll do a segment on a product, and that company will then say, can we embed that on our webpage? And we usually, in fact, we always say no.
Yeah. Well, what
but
you
I
should
don't
do,
think we can really stop it.
Here's what you
we?
Should do, Leah. Turn this thing around to your own advantage. So you have, let's say you have several ads on your shows. You could go to one of those advertisers and say, look, this is how much you spend on the ad. Take that money. Instead, we'll do the ad for free if you take that money and advertise links to the show. In other words, you could turn as payment for some of your advertisers into promotion for the shows.
I'd rather have cash.
Yeah. Cash is nice.
Give me cash.
Don't get me wrong. Cash is good.
Well, I think this kind of thing will happen. In fact, who knows? Maybe Mashable did say something like that. We don't know.
Yeah.
Because traffic is valuable.
Yes.
So it's good for everybody, at least now. Mashable got traffic.
Is less valuable.
It's less valuable than the dollars. And you're right,
Facebook gets a new kind of revenue. So we were talking just a few minutes ago about how Google and Facebook have to find new ways to get new pieces of the pie of the advertising. Right. This is a new kind of advertising.
Chat room, what do you think? What
Facebook gets it.
The consumers, I think these are ads. These are better than regular ads, because they point to it, well, one hopes, a trusted third party that's recommending the product.
Source you send to is trusted, not Sally's.
It has to be trusted.
You know,
yeah. There have been studies that indicate that socially shared content is more trustworthy than advertising.
Right.
You know, display.
But that's usually
like
socially shared from a friend of yours.
Exactly.
Not so sharing a Mashable article or advertising with a link to a Mashable article wouldn't.
But this changes the algorithms. If enough people click on that ad, Facebook sees that people are going to that article. Google sees that the articles get a lot of traffic.
Right.
People share it more because it comes up in their algorithms, and it's like they're trying to create a sort of virality.
Well, you heard it here first. We warned you first.
Yeah.
You're going to see more of these ads. I think it's a better kind.
One more
of
question.
Ad.
Well, that's yeah.
One more question. So I saw a sponsored post for the Cardia, the EKG thing we've talked about in the show. It's a sponsored post. They bought it, but I like the product, so I shared their sponsored post and said this thing works. Do they pay for that?
No.
That's a freebie to them.
You gave them a freebie.
I gave them free advertising.
I think probably people who create native content, that's one of the side benefits is the potential to get more traffic by having that be shared.
To me, the most important thing is advertising is good. And you know, the good advertising is good. Bad advertising is bad. We're all sick of the really junky, garbagey advertising. But we really, really want advertising. And this is why I think that you've praised Medium's move to paid.
Yeah. At first I was suspect. And I know Jeff, I think, probably still is. But it worked for me because Baratunde became hidden behind a paywall. It was $5 a month, and I bought it because I wanted to see his article.
$5 a month is a lot of money for a lot of people. Essentially, it's creating it would be great if all Medium content was available to everyone with an internet connection globally. Unfortunately, $5 can be like somebody's weekly salary in lots of parts of the world, and they just can't afford to read Medium. And that further advantages people who are already advantaged. And so if you just make content advertiser supported, those of us who buy the products are subsidizing it so that the whole world can see that content. I think that's better. Advertising is good.
Yeah, you've said that before.
Yes.
It's democratizing.
Exactly.
And I actually, as somebody who's always worked in ad supported free media, I agree.
Yeah,
it's a bad, you know, on the one hand thing, nobody likes ads, right? So right. It's a bad thing in that respect. But
let's remember what it buys us. It buys us a world, right. a beautiful world, in which it's a redistribution of wealth that is voluntary.
Right.
I mean, it's beautiful. Like, it's not taxation.
In this age of fake news, to redline journalism and make it the product only for the elite is only going to exacerbate that problem.
That would be bad. Yep. Yeah. That's a very good
because
point.
If you're a cheapskate like me, you're going to end up going to another source anyway.
Right.
So that's what happens when I hit
Mr. Cheapskate.
When I hit,
do you pay for any news? Do you pay for the New York Times, the Washington Post?
I do not. And if I see a story there and I hit a paywall, I'll just go to another source.
Yep. I do that with Financial Times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just say, well, I guess I can't read that.
Yeah. It's terrible.
That's it. Really.
So I think what you're arguing for is true, is that this does need to be free and open.
Yes.
And that's the best way to get the good stories out there. Because what happens is what if I'm not me? What if I'm someone who maybe doesn't know the difference when they take a look at a story and I hit the Wall Street Journal and I can't get through and I end up going to the fake news, right? Yeah. It's a similar headline, but it has a totally different.
Fake news will always be free,
right?
Because it has an agenda.
It's always exactly.
The other thing is that
that's really interesting.
When organizations depend on advertising, they are vulnerable to boycotts and things like that. I mean, look what's happened with Fox News and some of the couple of shows on Fox News where there was some objectionable activity by one or two of the hosts. And everybody went after their advertisers and they went on vacation and spent more time with their family and all this kind of stuff. The public can put pressure on semi-fake news, semi-real news type news organizations to squeeze their advertisers.
So if all this is true, we want to keep ad-supported free media. One of the charges then would be to make advertising more palatable, more effective. And that's why I like this idea of sharing an article, because it's more palatable, it's more effective.
Yeah, theoretically, nobody likes the idea, like you said a minute ago, but nobody likes the idea of targeting. But if targeting really worked, it wouldn't feel like advertising. It'd be like, oh, we know what you want. This is exactly
you're looking for a car? You know, let's talk about it.
I mean, I spend a lot of time searching for things that I want. I'd love it for just come to me and say, look, this
is... Well, that's kind of what... So we don't need to track you and find out what your interests are. One of the reasons that a very niche network like this works is because it's very thin slice of the populace... But we know, if you want to talk to geeks, we're a great way to do it, right? And in fact, every time we've diverged, it's really, I should have known this, but every time we've diverged from hardcore geekdom, those shows don't make it.
Yeah.
They don't get the audience and they don't get the ads.
Yep.
So the shows that do the best here are the hardest core geek shows.
And the stuff you advertise is not... Again, don't want to make it all about a twit, but like
Rocket Mortgage, it's interesting. There's an example because that's a mainstream business.
Well,
right?
No, but
mortgage lenders.
No, but the audience.
They want to get geeks.
What geeks do is not just interested in geeks. They're open to alternative new ways to do things.
Right.
Even if it's beds and
a
things
good
like
point
that.
Too.
Right. It's
Casper, Harry's, Dollar Shave Club. That's a very good point.
Yeah. Geeks are open minded about new innovations by definition.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's an interesting world we live in.
Yeah.
Breaking news, the Facebook results are out.
Oh, let's go check them out.
How bad/good is it?
Oh, it's tremendous again.
I guess they made money, I'm guessing.
So,
oh, yeah.
Before we get into...
2 billion users. We're seeing... This is a live blog from MarketWatch.
2 billion too many, if you ask me.
We knew that it was going to hit 2 billion. The biggest quarter ever for hires. They're growing. I'm going backwards, so this is backwards in time. Expenses are going to grow for the year. Oh, there's a story up 40 to 50% compared to big growth in expenses.
Yeah, Business Insider, Wall Street Journal has a story up. Right. Business Insider does.
I pay for the Wall Street Journal, so let's.
Let's get what you're paid.
No paywall for you.
No paywall for me. Facebook profit jumped 71%.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
71%? Oh, man. And me without any tech stocks. Holy cow. Jeez Louise. Profit Rose.
Yeah, Leo, it's like, are you like the Donald Trump of the tech world, that if you close down Twit and took all of your money and just put it in tech stocks, which you can't get now, would you make more money than you do from Twit?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, absolutely.
If you put the right tech stock.
Right.
I know. It's so funny now because I have a lot of friends who are angel investors and got into it for whatever reason. They're younger than I am, maybe in their 30s. And many of these people, you know, are success, huge successes because they invested in Uber and Twitter. But as I see, and companies like that, as I see those companies start to fail and falter, mm-hmm. these people don't look like the geniuses that they were four years ago, right? I got in at the beginning on Uber. I still haven't made any money. I got in at the beginning at Twitter. Oh, that stock's good, huh?
Yeah.
Are you happy now? So you know,
I bought Yahoo when it was
$20.
Put it all into MySpace.
I did have a friend, and it's actually kind of a tragic story, who worked at Waze, which was a database company that was purchased by Yahoo. And in the purchase, he got a lot of Yahoo stock. Yeah. Was it Yahoo or AOL? No, it was AOL. Even worse. He got a lot of AOL stock and did not diversify.
Hmm.
Probably should have. So he was living high on the hog for a while.
Yeah.
But now, not so much. And
Wow.
Yeah. So that's why, yes, maybe I would if I invested in the right stocks, but I think I'll just stick with what I'm doing right now. I like the small, slow growth of Twit as opposed to the potential 71% earnings per share of $1.32. That's up from 78 cents. Analysts thought, okay. They thought they'd do $1.12. They did $1.32.
You know, it really bothers me when that Facebook is so successful. I think they are too powerful. They can just pick the president with a secret tweet to their algorithm, and nobody could know.
Nobody would know.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Forget the Russians. Right. Facebook.
Yeah.
Net profit was $2.3 billion a year ago, $3.9 billion.
Yeah.
1 year later. Quarterly revenue up 45% to $9.3 billion. That's more than the analyst consensus as well. That means the stock will go through the roof tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
after hours.
They're up at 4% in after hours right now.
Yeah. wait a minute.
First. Need the money.
Oh, here's a good one. If you include Facebook and Google, they soaked up, between the two of them, 99% of the online ad industry's growth last year. Almost all the growth in the ad industry last year went to two companies, Facebook and Google.
They are to advertising what Apple and Samsung are to phone profits.
Yeah. Now, Facebook warns the number of ads in its news feed is maxed out.
Yeah.
Just added WhatsApp ads.
Yeah. Oh, are there going to be ads in WhatsApp?
Ads, yeah. Messenger ads. Yeah. So
I think they're smart, and they're doing what we do, which is to keep units down. Instagram, it's one every 10 posts. On Facebook, it really, those side ads, I don't even see them, and I doubt anybody does, and they're not that important. But the periodic ads in the stream, that's effective. That's what Instagram's doing.
They're getting better at the relevance there. I find the ads, you know, 1 out of 10 is irritating and off target. And when I do try to tell them it's off target, the choices of telling them just aren't quite, like, I already bought a car. Stop.
Right. Yeah. Ad revenue up 53% this quarter. 53%.
That's too many percent.
They're doing something right.
Yeah.
Well, they're getting more powerful, but Google's getting more powerful. These companies are.
They're doing some things right. They're screwing up a lot less than they used to, but the biggest secret to their success is they have a monopoly on everybody. Everybody's on Facebook because everybody's on Facebook, and that's because in the game of musical chairs over time, where technology trends match social trends, they happen to be the major social network when everybody got on social networking. Before Facebook, it was just geeks like us who were on CompuServe and all these other places. And they will always have the mother of all network effects.
And now you understand why it's in Facebook's interest to get publishers to put content there, why they're spending so much money now on live content, on video content. Yeah. They plan to spend 50% more this year.
The next thing I think you're going to see, what we said earlier is you got to steal revenue from somebody else. The place everybody wants to steal revenue from is television. So it's not just live. Look what Facebook does, because Facebook TV is going to be coming up very soon.
Yep. They're willing to spend.
YouTube is changing itself.
They're willing
this is going to be a big deal.
To spend $3 million an episode on episodic content for Facebook. That's significant money. I don't know if that's not Game of Thrones money, but it's getting close. What if there were a 10-minute weekly show of interest equivalent to Game of Thrones on Facebook? Well, everybody would it would just be they should do that. That's smart.
Let me tell you this. It's like, imagine they did a Game of Thrones, House of Cards type level TV show. They have 2 billion monthly active users. They're massively larger than Showtime or Netflix or
they'd make the money back in ads if they put ads.
Yeah, it's terrifying. They can basically write their own ticket and do whatever they want.
So
they
House of Cards had 13 episodes in season 1 and it was $100 million. So that's like $8-9 million an episode, something like that. So it's still, you know, but it's an hour long high production value show. 3 million's not that far off.
Yeah.
Mike,
yes.
Here's why you want to like Facebook is because Zuckerberg likes things to be free. I'm told that though they're now putting up subscription funnels for publishers because publishers have been whining about it and complaining about it. Even News Corp is working with them on this potentially. But what I'm told is that Zuckerberg himself just it grates him to have anything paid. He wants he wants it free. And so TV they do, I'll bet you they won't have premium TV. I'll bet you they'll have just free ad-supported TV.
They need more. They're running out of ad real estate. They need somewhere to put ads.
Yeah.
That's why they put ads
and
in Messenger.
Google has the rest of the web. WhatsApp.
Yeah. But Facebook's got Facebook with a lock-in.
Has Facebook.
They don't need to do more ads, actually. They just need to raise prices.
Well, good news. The cost of ads on Facebook rose as much as 39% this quarter.
It's a scarcity.
57% increase in the cost of some ads. So these are two different marketing technology companies, Kenshu and Merkle. So Kenshu reported 39%. Merkle reported 57%.
Yep. And that'll just keep going up.
Wow. Facebook stock price up, as you said, 4%, Aaron, and I bet you that's just the
beginning. They said it headed down first because there was confusion over you. They switched to GAAP standards, and so there was some confusion at first about the comparisons. But I guess the market got smarter. It went up.
Yeah, the market got smarter. The wisdom of crowds. What is Facebook stock symbol, F?
It's the F stock, the F word.
Yeah, it is. No, F is Ford, sorry.
Should be Zuck.
I thought it was FBOOK, but I might be wrong. It's FB on the NASDAQ. Okay. Mm. Let's see the after hours. Whoa!
Oh, my.
Whoa! After hours trading. Whoa!
Just launching into the stratosphere.
So the blue line is right up to closing of stock, and then the gray line is right after the announcement. So you see it went up, and then there's that.
That's when they got off Facebook to listen to the announcement.
The drop. Well, that's probably what Jeff was saying, which misunderstanding of what the revenues meant. And they're currently, so they closed at 165. They're currently at 172. Mm-hmm. Price to earnings is pretty high, 41. All right.
Man.
I'm no stock analyst.
So can we talk about another metric besides money?
Yeah.
So
Ethereum?
No. Customer satisfaction. The American Customer Satisfaction Index released its 2017. Yeah, you knew this was coming, Jeff. And Google Plus is the most satisfying social
network.
That
is the weirdest story I've ever heard. How did that even happen?
I'll tell you. They don't have ads, for starters.
The most loved social network in America.
I'll tell you how it happens. Everybody hates the other social networks more than they used to.
Yeah, but is this a poll or is this measuring actual? Yeah, it's a survey. So that's what happens. Same thing happens with PBS. Everybody says they watch PBS, but really they're watching The Bachelorette.
This isn't about popularity. This doesn't tell how many people are on Google Plus. It says the people who are on Google Plus like it better than the people who are on Facebook or whatever.
Well, it's a survey of 5,000 consumers who responded over email, and they were asked, "What do you use? What do you like?" What were they asked?
Yeah. And so the ranking, just so you know, it's based on 0 to 100 points. Google Plus number one at 81 points. Pinterest number two. What's interesting about both of those are both of those social networks did a little analysis on Google Plus about
this.
Don't
have a lot of ads.
Well, what they have in common is their areas where – so think of the clash of argumentation on social networks like Twitter. Twitter invites people with diverging views to come together and argue with each other violently. And everybody's sick of that. And so I think they're taking it out on those other social networks. Google Plus and Pinterest are all about people's interests and like-minded people. You can, what you do on Google Plus and Pinterest and also Reddit, which is not on this list for some reason, is you find your tribes, you find your communities of people who generally like the same things you like and who agree with you more or less about various things, and you interact with those people. It doesn't throw together opposites so that they argue and bicker and all that kind of stuff. And then if you look at the bottom, it's LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube. Those are places where people are clashing and arguing and disagreeing. Not LinkedIn so much.
Wikipedia was number three, which is
that's
great.
Not a social network. Come on. It's like, why is it even
Mike,
on here?
I think you're onto something, Mike, because last week we talked about Kevin Roose's column in the New York Times, in which he went into 100 secret groups on Facebook and said, maybe this is the future of civility. But you're exactly what you're saying. People are finding – now that we're going to get the echo chamber argument back again, but it never goes away. But yeah, you get to find people who share your interest, and there's no reason to argue with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is – you know, the news and discourse has been poisoned by weaponized information, by fake news, by propaganda, by all these, you know, crazy people screaming at each other and trying to distance the public from – other members of the public. It's very divisive and everybody's kind of sickened by it. And if you go to some of these other places where you can just pursue your interests and talk to people who are rational, it's better. And so, you know, the fact is that Google Plus isn't as good as it used to be when it ranked lower. Google Plus has gotten worse. Several other social networks have gotten worse and several social networks have stayed as bad as they've always been. But more or less, the places where people are bickering and arguing and where there's trolls and harassment, they're ranking the social networks, their satisfaction of the users is lower. And I think it's not because of the qualities of the social networks, it's because of the decline in civil discourse.
Here is an article, which is probably a little stingy to Facebook right now after their big announcement. Facebook worker living in garage says to Zuckerberg, you don't need to travel across the U.S. to learn about people's hopes and challenges. Just talk to your cafeteria workers. This guy works at the Facebook cafeteria, apparently struggling to make ends meet. They're a little wealth inequality right there in Lotus Land.
And their house, by the way, and this is a true story, is smaller than the giant vault Zuck built underground where he keeps all the Scrooge McDuck gold coins and his big treasure chest.
Does he really have a vault?
Oh, no. He must. Come on. Wouldn't you like have a giant Richie Rich vault?
I'd have one of those safe rooms that you go into. For sure.
I would have the swimming pool full of gold coins that have little dollar signs on them and just swim in it, you know?
Dive in it.
But that's just me.
They actually, it's not a bad job. They both work there, Victor and Nicole. Nicole makes $19.85 an hour. He makes $17.85 an hour. The problem is that they live in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
That's good pay.
Problem. Yeah.
But they live in Silicon Valley, and you can't live on that.
Yeah. There are places in the Bay Area that are so out of whack. I think in Marin it is that if you're below $100,000 a year, you're in the poverty.
Yeah. They have lived there their whole lives. In fact, when they were growing up, his father was able to buy a small house there from his earnings as a landscaper. When they first got married, they were earning $12 an hour as Chipotle managers. They had their own apartment. But then Facebook moves into Menlo Park, and they have to live in a garage because that's the best they can get.
Yeah. Facebook is planning to build new apartments, including low-income units, but they can't build enough.
Yeah, be interesting to see companies like Amazon and Facebook, and I think they're moving in this direction, create basically company cities.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that what Foxconn does? It's creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, my soul to the company's store.
Exactly.
Where you have to buy.
That's also breaking news.
What's that?
They're going to build a U.S. plant. They're going to build an American plant for $10 million.
So Apple, Donald Trump tweeted that Tim Cook had promised him that he was going to build three big, beautiful plants in the U.S.
Yeah.
So that At least one of those was real. Maybe there are more coming.
I just love how the president is taking credit for Apple's. You know, they've moved stuff to the U.S. before, and it's he thinks that if you bluster, then everything
it's all,
moves.
I did it all.
Yeah.
But I have to say, this news is timely, right? It's right after the tweet. Apple's immediate reaction was no comment. Apple did, you remember, famously try to do an assembly of the Mac Pro in Texas. Right. That failed.
They also failed was, remember, their factory where they're going to build they were going to build sapphire crystals.
Yeah, and they got sued by the company. And
or they sued the company or something like that. And, yeah. And they built the whole factory, and then they ended up closing it and stuff like that. But
is that a statement on the quality of American workers or the cost of American workers?
It's not workers. It's supervisors. The U.S. cannot produce enough factory supervisors with the education and training and engineering training. We're maxed out on engineers. We need to import more engineers, more programmers. That's the kind of thing. You can get lots and lots of workers if you pay them enough. But it's like that's what China has that the U.S. doesn't have. It's just legions of trained managerial level engineering talent.
So this is Foxconn, not Apple, but Foxconn, of course, makes the iPhones. Foxconn wants to build a factory in Wisconsin.
They've been talking about that for years.
They did the same in Brazil because Brazil had high tariffs, and the only way to make a reasonably priced iPhone in Brazil was to manufacture it there.
Yeah.
Apple's going to do the same in India. India also has very restrictive rules about what companies can sell in non-Indian companies can sell in India.
Yeah.
But there's not that kind of pressure in the U.S. yet. They're going to build a $10 billion manufacturing plant with 13,000 jobs.
It's all about jobs. Is 13,000 jobs a lot for a factory that size? What makes it possible to manufacture in the U.S. is robotics.
Remember that Foxconn replaced 13,000 workers with robots in China.
Right.
Right.
Not so long ago.
They're going to get ahead.
And they're thinking long term. So even if you hire 13,000 employees, it's kind of like Uber drivers. They're essentially just training Uber self-driving car technology. That's what they're they're a placeholder until the self-driving cars hit. Same thing with any sort of factory you build in 2017, 2018. You're essentially building a factory that will sooner rather than later be mostly robotic.
Actually, I correct myself. Foxconn replaced 60,000 workers with robots in China.
Yep.
60,000. All right, let's take a little break. We'll have more. Mike Elgin is here, digital nomad. Mike Elgin, the world traveler. You can find more about him and what he and Namira are doing at gastronomad.net. Their next event is in Barcelona in September. You're going to do Fez, Morocco after that.
We got a bunch lined up, Leo. We're going to do Italy. We're going to do France.
Put me down for Italy.
You got it.
Seriously. Where in Italy, you think?
Prosecco Hills. That's what we were doing.
Yeah, put me down.
You're going to love
Italy.
It. You're
put me down it. For Italy. I don't care when or where. I'm there. Well, I know where. Aaron Newcomb is also here. He's at New Relic these days. You can find him on the Twitter at Aaron Newcomb. He's, of course, the founder and runs the Benicia Makerspace. It's going there? Doing well?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we just opened up another 1,200 square feet for classroom space and dedicated electronics work areas that can be hopefully a little cleaner because they were in our other shop with all the woodworking and metalworking.
See, that's where the future of manufacturing in the United States is going to happen, is people learning these skills in hacker spaces. Yeah. I think that's awesome. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and what you're really doing there is I think a little bit towards what Mike was saying is that you're teaching people how to be innovators, right? Not just workers on an assembly line, but you're teaching them to think critically and to come up with new ideas. And I think that's again the knowledge, getting the knowledge and the confidence to be able to do that is where the future lies.
Yeah. Well, and it's fun. It's a great hobby.
Yeah.
And Aaron is a regular on many of our shows. In fact, we got to get you back. We had you scheduled for the new screensavers. You couldn't do it, but let's get you back in soon.
I would
very much like to get you on and talk about your latest making projects. Also, all the way from Australia, where the sun is just coming up on Thursday morning, Jeff Jarvis. He is, of course, a blogger at buzzmachine.com. And Twitter's at Jeff Jarvis. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom. Summertime is here, the time for family vacations, sunscreen, barbecues. But, And I know it's nobody wants to think about it. It might be a good thing this summer to prepare for your family's future with an estate plan from LegalZoom. You see, it's National Make-A-Will Month next month. Perfect time to make sure you're prepared for the future. We did this. Actually, Lisa did this, and it was great. You get a great kit, all the forms you need. And then if you need legal advice, LegalZoom's not a law firm, but they have put together a really nice network of independent attorneys now in all 50 states. They finally got to those last few states. So you can go to an attorney in your state and ask questions, work with them to get the right estate plan, and not at a huge hourly fee, but at a pre-negotiated flat rate. So if you're doing a will or they do living trusts, you bet you can get the advice you need to address the needs of your family. During National Make-A-Will Month in August, LegalZoom is pulling a bunch of helpful resources together all in one place to make it a little easier to ensure your family and your assets are protected. But don't wait till August. Get started right now at LegalZoom.com. Not just your estate plan. Plan your business. Start your business. You know what a good estate plan is? Start a business. I'll tell you what. I put my kids through college. And where did I start that LLC? LegalZoom.com. If you have a family or own anything you care about, now's the time. In the meantime, see what else LegalZoom.com has to offer and save more by entering TWIG at checkout. LegalZoom.com. We did the trademarks there too. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TWIG. And we thank LegalZoom for their support in more than one way. Artificial intelligence. There's a little cat fight going on now. I love this. Elon Musk said AI ought to be regulated. Last week we talked a little bit about Rodney Brooks, who's the creator of iRobot and is a professor of robotics at MIT, might know a little bit about AI. He says all the people want to regulate AI don't work in AI. He said, what does Elon want to regulate? You know what you ought to regulate? Self-driving Teslas. That's what you ought to regulate. Now Mark Zuckerberg weighs in and he says, Elon's views on artificial intelligence are pretty irresponsible. Why is Mark weighing in on this? Does he have something up his sleeve?
Oh, yeah. They're working on AI. They want AI replacing their algorithms in the future so that AI can just figure out what you see, what you don't see. Figure out the advertising. AI is going to be huge in the world of social networking, and he's counting on it to be competitive. Facebook has amazing face recognition. That's based on AI, machine learning.
Right.
And it's incredible. It's better than the FBI's. They can recognize your face even if your back is turned. I mean, it's amazing. Huh.
That's your head. Zuckerberg says, and I kind of agree, this is like what you've talked about in the past, Jeff, with the techno panic. He could have been taking this out of the Jeff Jarvis playbook. People are arguing for slowing down the process of building AI. I find that really questionable, says Zuckerberg. I have a hard time wrapping my head around it. As an example, he says, one of the top causes of death for people, car accidents. If you can eliminate that with self-driving cars, that's going to be a dramatic improvement in people's lives.
Any technology can be misused.
That's what Zuck says.
It will be misused. It doesn't mean you should control it. Yeah, this is the irony here is it's techno panic from the most technological person probably we have.
Elon Musk. Meanwhile, Elon says Mark Zuckerberg's knowledge of AI's future is limited. They're kind of having a little pissing match.
Please cue the cats.
Yeah. And of course, Elon's never been shy, like Steve Jobs and others, of saying somebody's stupid if he thinks they're not as bright as he is.
And in unrelated news, Elon Musk's news feed is empty, and his posts are not going to any of his friends.
I wonder if Musk has a Facebook page. He's got it, right? That's the thing. He's got it. Yeah. Everybody has to.
But isn't that, I mean, with him going to the governors and saying they should start legislating and all this kind of stuff, isn't that kind of like calling fire in the theater?
Right.
I mean,
right.
I agree with those, Mark included, that have said, like, that is irresponsible. Like, why would you say that? This is something that's, you know, in its infancy, and it's something we can definitely control. It's okay to raise a concern, but don't go to governors and say, start legislating this now.
Because those are the people who will, first of all, can and truly don't understand it. And we'll listen to somebody like Elon Musk and say, uh-oh, we better do something right now. Brooks' point was, Rodney Brooks at MIT's point was, well, what are you going to regulate? It's either something exists or it doesn't exist. And since it doesn't exist at this point, he also says anybody who does AI knows it's not that smart. Right. It's a long way to go. Elon's response to Mark Zuckerberg's crack. I've talked to Mark about this. I love this. I need a voice for this. His understanding of the subject is limited. Wow. What a snotty tweet. All right. Well, it's there's nothing to say here except meow. And I think we are in agreement that it is like crying fire in a crowded theater. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
It also reminds me. Remember, I think it was Warner Brothers. I think wasn't it many years ago when this is a great anecdote. I forget which book had it. Where the Google guys, the founders, were at Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers basically said, "Don't ruin advertising. You're messing this up."
Yeah. Well, too late. They ruined it.
And I went to an event in Washington last week where the Americans in the room were trying to basically convince the Europeans to stop trying to regulate speech.
Yeah, good luck.
It worked.
Well, Google has responded to, remember we talked about the Canadian court that said Google had to strip libelous postings that the Canadian court considered libelous, had to strip those postings not just in Canada but from the entire Google search worldwide. Google has gone to the Ninth District Court in California to get that overturned. They asked the judge, they said, they told the justices that the Canadian case's outcome runs counter to America's First Amendment. And so Google's asking the U.S. Judges to reject the findings of the Canadian court.
I'm not clear what the outcome would be.
Isn't there an international court that adjudicates this kind of stuff?
Yeah, but he didn't go to that. He went to a judge in the U.S. So let's say the U.S. judge agrees and sides with Google. Then what?
Then what?
Because basically, you're talking about Canadian law, and they can take action against Google's activities in Canada. That's their leverage. That's their only leverage.
But this is the world where we are now. Yeah. Right. This is where Google is going to pit nations against each other in a Japanese monster movie fight in Tokyo Bay here and stand back and watch. But that's, you know, what does the nation have the same authority that it had in a truly international world? It does not. That's why we're seeing the rise of nationalism.
It does within the nation. What Canada is not allowed to do and shouldn't be allowed to do, in my opinion, is overrule the First Amendment in the United States for America. You can drive to the Google campus from here in like an hour and a half. And if I'm going to Google to get information about what is actually on the internet, not a censored version of that, but what's actually on the internet, which again isn't entirely true. But what right does a foreign government have to step in between me and Google in a country that has the First Amendment? I say they have zero right to do that. And it's also cowardly on the part of the Canadian judges doing this and the Canadian government people who support this. Because if they want to be censors, they can build a great firewall of Canada, and they can censor the internet, just like China does. Stand up and take your lungs. Yeah. If you're a censor, you're censoring, then censor.
Google do your dirty work.
Exactly. And so it's like, no. And it's, again, the slippery slope argument is obvious. China is going to decide that nobody in the world can talk about Tiananmen Square, and Russia is going to decide, et cetera. Forget about it. It's terrible.
So, Mike, what's going to happen, I think, is that Google, the doctrine that Google and Facebook want, I think, here is we will, whether we like it or not, we will follow local laws locally.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think what they're trying to get is the United States court to say, the thing about the First Amendment, though, is it's about government censorship. Here's the really weird thing about it, right? American government
U.S.
censorship
government
in America.
Censorship. Yeah.
Yes. And so, but if they can say, listen, we got two countries with two different rulings, we're just going to follow each country unto itself.
Right. And if Canada wants to punish Google financially with fines or whatever, then that's the course it has to take. If Google actually agrees with this ruling and actually performs that censorship, I'm moving to Bing. That is outrageous. They cannot do that. Yeah. If money is so important to them that they would do that, then I'm willing to use a search engine that does that.
There's also a French case, a right to be forgotten case in France that Google is appealing to a European court. Of course, they've lost before, but I think that's what it was. I could be wrong.
Yeah. That and I mentioned Bing. That's the other bizarre thing about this ruling. It doesn't apply to Bing or other search engines. Only one company, even though these links exist on the other search engines. Mm. Arbitrary.
Speaking of laws overturning state, national laws overturning laws of other lands. How about a national law that overturns the laws of mathematics?
I like it.
The Prime Minister of Australia, Malcolm Turnbull, says, let me find the exact quote because it's pretty funny. So he was challenged on whether it was possible to crack down on encryption because encryption is governed by the laws of mathematics and you can't really stop that from working.
You can try.
So Turnbull said, well, the laws of Australia prevail in Australia. I can assure you of that. The laws of mathematics are very commendable, but the only law that applies in Australia is the law of Australia.
I think they should start with overturning the laws of physics because those are more dangerous than the laws of mathematics.
That's right.
Australia is one of the Five Eyes, and of course they're all, and I'm sure this will happen in the U.S. England's done it. Australia's proposing something similar to the English Snoopers Charter, which would force companies to hand over the clear text contents of encrypted messages on their services. The problem is, of course, if they don't have the clear text, they can't do that. So the only way to adhere to that law would be to break the encryption, to put a backdoor in. So we'll see.
Or to disallow encryption.
To disallow it. To say there's no encryption or... we're going to hold the keys, and if we're asked, we'll give them the information. Or we'll give the government a backdoor.
Right.
All three of which have been proposed by various governments. What a surprise. I'm sorry, Prime Minister, but you can't overturn the law of mathematics. It's just, it's not that kind of law.
You should overturn Moore's Law. Maybe that would help.
Yeah. It's not that kind of law. I'm quite enjoying watching with interest, since I don't have a dog in the cryptocurrency hunt, the various dramas that are going on in Bitcoin, you know, the potential forking of Bitcoin. And last week you might have noted that the biggest heist in the history of cryptocurrencies occurred, $31 million worth of Ether. That's the currency of the Ethereum network, were stolen in a matter of minutes. In fact, it could have been a lot worse, but fortunately somebody caught them and analyzed the attack. They couldn't reverse the thefts that had occurred, but they protected the rest of the wallets. They actually hacked them before the bad guy did. And so they hacked all the remaining at-risk Ethereum wallets, drained their accounts, preventing the attacker from reaching the remaining $150 million.
Unbelievable.
And then today's story that the SEC has decided that ICOs are regulatable. It's not exactly the same as regulating Bitcoin, but it's a kind of a step down that road. Yeah. Securities and Exchange Commission yesterday ruled that some of the coins for sale in the initial coin offerings are actually securities and therefore subject to regulation. So ICO is a really, it's like an IPO, but for individuals and small companies, right? In an ICO, which can last anywhere from a few hours to a few weeks, a company will invite people to buy digital tokens.
Yeah.
Kind of like on Kickstarter or Indiegogo to fund a project, but you do get some stake then, I guess, in the company. But it involves blockchain software like Ethereum, like Bitcoin. Otherwise, the ledger can be tampered with, so that you need some way of making sure that everybody agrees about what happened and it can't be modified. To take part in an ICO, you send Bitcoin to a website run by the company, and then you get these digital tokens. The tokens... So this is what the SEC wants to regulate, is these tokens, because it looks a lot like stock, right?
Right.
The tokens give the holder a right to participate in a in in a pre-specified blockchain activity, it depends on what the company wants to do. The company might say, you have to have a token to join an automated investment project to get access to certain services. Or, I mean, it could even be to vote at as a shareholder. But the tokens can also be bought and sold, right? I have a token. I gave the Mike Elgin Digital Nomad currency. I gave you some Bitcoin. You gave me some tokens. I could sell that to Aaron. And so that is kind of a lot like securities. And the SEC said, yep, these are indeed securities. So this was actually a part of an investigation to a German company called the DAO, or Decentralized Autonomous Organization, that raised $150 million in ICOs last year.
Feels pyramid-y, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of scammy. And I think it probably should be regulated.
Yeah.
But it did cost a little money to Ethereum holders. The price of Ethereum went down 10% yesterday on that news.
Plus, it also sounds like a mineral you'd hear in the movie Avatar or something.
ICO?
Ethereum.
Ethereum. I know it does. I like Ethereum.
Unobtainium.
Unobtainium. So, but, you know, this is not the first time, you know, digital currencies, cryptocurrencies have been stolen. They're not, you know, they're kind of not that secure.
Yeah.
Although they seem like they would be, but they're not.
Yeah. It'd be securable. And it's a lot less interesting than a bank robbery with, like, you know, Bonnie and Clyde with the Tommy guns.
It's also a lot more lucrative.
Yeah.
$13 million could have been 180, or $31 million. It could have been $180 million.
Yeah.
I don't know where you spend this.
Did you read the Silk Road book?
No, Nick Bilton's book. I got to read it because Nick's coming on Triangulation pretty soon.
It's very good.
I heard it was
very good.
Couldn't put it down. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty
cool. I listened
to
it on Audible, and it was just great.
Google has added SOS alerts, kind of like Facebook Safety Check, but they've added them to Search and to Maps.
The weird thing is that humans are putting these together. It's not algorithmically determinant.
Oh,
which is like, wait a minute, what business is Google in? I mean, I imagine they may have a long-term goal.
I think when you're talking about natural disasters, you probably don't want to trust it to a machine.
But then why is Google doing it? I mean, isn't trusting things to machines what Google... I guess it's valuable information for their...
The reason is it has all these mechanisms to be able to distribute through maps, through phones, through browsers, through... I think that they make sense as a great... When disaster strikes, is Facebook really the first place you're going to turn?
That safety check is cool. I mean, there have been some problems with it, and there's always the issue of if you're in an infected area, you know, where there's been a tornado or a tsunami, and you don't use Facebook or you don't check in,
then
people might think, oh, they didn't make it. It's not universal enough. This isn't really like this. This collates information you might need to know from governments and other authoritative organizations. And that's why they wanted humans. It's a curation effort.
In fairness, the Google's past efforts at providing information in certain sort of disasters or whatever has been amazing. You know, they're providing maps and all kinds
of... remember the flu map that they did and things like that?
Yeah.
I mean, they're good on data.
Yeah.
And they will aggregate data from first responders, trusted media outlets, government agencies.
And if you think about it, the best place for that is on the Google. And the Google app, right? With the cards.
Right. Oh, I wonder if you'll be in Google now. They mention, they say, if you're near a major crisis, you have to be in the vicinity of it, and you search for related words or phrases on Google, you may see a banner indicating there's an ongoing crisis followed by emergency information and resources, such as useful translations or phone numbers. So let's say you're in Thailand and there's a tsunami, but you speak English. You search for, what do I do in a tsunami?
Right.
You could get some useful information there. If you've installed the latest version of the Google app and your location, and your location is turned on, you may also receive a notification on your mobile device's home screen.
That's a good place for it. And I would love for Google to get more aggressive about putting that screen in our faces better.
Yeah.
You know, at least
take
on Chromebooks.
Over the lock screen.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Why not? Make it optional, of course, but you know, you have to go find it, and that's it doesn't quite work for that type.
I also like this. They're going to do it on maps. So if we are looking at a map and we, you know, and there's tornadoes in Tornado Alley, we will see, even if we're not there, if we're in California, we'll see some sort of indication and that there's something going on and there's an alert and you can click it and find out more. Right. I think that's really useful map information. Yeah. I like that.
I mean,
Facebook. They do it. I mean, they do it already with Amber Alerts, right? I mean, I know that's built into the phone functionality. I subscribe to those and that is in your face. Excuse me. It really does get your attention when there's an Amber Alert.
Right. No, I agree with you. I'm just going to zoom out here, see if there's anything going on in the world.
I mean, a lot of the Facebook things, you know, they've been touch and go with their service. It's mostly about reassuring loved ones that you're okay in a disaster.
The world has disappeared.
Yeah, no, that's it right there.
Oh, my God.
Tiny blue dot right there.
Oh, my God. Okay, never mind.
Yeah. And, you know, but it's like, you know, if there's a disaster in Australia and Jeff doesn't check in and, you know, everybody's like, well, he had a good run. He was, he had a good life.
The only thing
he
I
left
got
was good bandwidth.
Is there? By the way, this is drives me crazy. See that there? This guy, I'm not going to highlight it because it'll show his name.
Yeah.
In Joplin, Missouri, has
shared his location.
Shared his location.
Right. What do you care?
Yeah. Does yeah, what did we do about? Can I just? Can I get rid of that?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because people do that with me. See, here's somebody in England.
I get it all the time. I'm like, I don't. First of all, I don't need to know, and I don't want to see them on the map.
If I were in your family, I might care, but I don't want to see this guy's...
Same thing on Waze. When Waze tells me somebody is driving, how can I possibly use that information?
Right.
Trying to be a social network.
It's an attempt to be so... It's stupid social.
Yeah.
Well, Google should at least give you controls, like if they aren't in your contact list, for instance. They shouldn't be able to add their face to my map.
Worst thing about Waze, though, is when it says it makes you confirm that you're not driving. It's like, what are you, my mother?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
well, I think it probably doesn't do that for local laws and stuff, right?
That's
liable. They have to do that.
I mean,
yeah, they have to.
Google Maps doesn't when you're getting turn-by-turn directions.
That's
the same
true.
Company.
Yeah. Waze will now be part of Android Auto, and it's coming soon to what is it? Apple's thing. Apple Car? I can't remember.
Apple Auto, I think.
Did you ever get a car with Android Auto, Jeff? I know you.
So here's the deal. I'll actually write a post about this because I tortured all my friends, including on Twig, about this car. I bought a Mazda CX-5, which I absolutely adore. Love this thing. And I gave up on getting Android Auto. I said, to hell with it. And then after I got it, they announced that they're going to port Android Auto onto it. We don't have a date yet, but they've announced that. So I will get Android Auto in the car.
Yay.
Nice.
We're looking, Lisa.
Then I'll complain about it, and I won't use it, and I'll send it back, but, you know, I'll get it.
Here's Roberto Baldwin showing how it works on this is a Chevy Cruze. Chevy's one of the cars that has Android Auto. In fact, we're looking at a Bolt. Lisa wants to buy a car at the end of the year. Her lease runs out and on her old car, and we're really – I was thrilled to see that at least a couple of the cars – she wants an electric car. She's great. Looking at have Android Auto. That'll be fantastic. Yeah. Or CarPlay, Apple's CarPlay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, by the way, there are instructions for the Mazda. I could sideload Android Auto into the car.
Oh, good.
Somebody came up with something for that, but I don't think I will.
I love.
I don't want to brick my car.
I love Waze, and I think having Waze on your dashboard, you could have, you know, it's Google Maps before. I guess apps have to kind of prove themselves.
Right.
But there is one thing that worries me a little bit, and Roberto is pointing this out right now. If you look at the dashboard, he's got that Waze screen where you can report hazards ahead.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an example of Waze. You know, Waze should say, you can't do this right now. You're driving.
Well, yeah, yeah, I mean, I
Plus, it's the stupidest alerts, you know, car to the side. Yeah, it was fine. My favorite is pothole ahead. No S.
Well, if there's a big
New
pothole.
Jersey, there's potholes everywhere.
sinkhole ahead, I'd want to know.
Yeah, and then you get these jerks. It's probably somebody's kid. You're in a rainy day, right. And they'll say every 2 miles, they say, it's rain ahead, and you can't turn that off.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, I do. I have the thing where you wave your hand over your phone and then you can say it. But This is on screen. I don't think they have that feature in Android Auto. So
yeah,
I don't know. That always kind of made me.
I've tried Android Auto a little bit, running it on the phone, because you can do that now too, if you don't have the option of putting it in the car. And it's okay. It's all right. I don't know. I find it just as easy to keep the phone running the way it is and use it, or not use it. Sorry.
It's a little bigger though on the screen, right? It's bigger icons. Yeah. A little bit easier to manipulate.
They blow things up a little bit on your phone, make it easier to read. But they also disable some things that you can't do everything.
Right.
So
yeah, which is irritating, right?
Yeah.
I'd rather have a mount.
I tried to use Android Auto in one car. I got to say, it did. After all the desire for me to get it, it irritated me and how much it. And Mike, this is your point. How much it was a babysitter.
Yeah.
You can't take that with you.
Yep.
Can't take it with you, it's Jeff.
Or what's that commercial now? You're not taking that with you.
Andrea.
You're not taking that.
Alicia. What's it like outside? Let's see. Android users are going to get the latest emoji soon. We're going to do on Saturday, our friend who's on the Unicode committee, the emoji committee at the Unicode Consortium is going to stop by and talk about. They're talking about new emojis already. They do it all the time. But notice something about these new Android emojis. They're not blob-like.
They're not blobs.
They're circles.
Highly controversial.
Oh, are you going to miss the blob?
I think people liked them because it was a differentiator, and now they're joining the herd. But, you know, you could actually get your own emoji, Leo. You know people on the committee, right? So,
well, Tanya Hall got a milkshake emoji. She talked to Jeremy and said, there needs to be a milkshake emoji.
It's a good point.
And he said, you're right. Now, they don't call it, okay, just so you know, they don't call it milkshake. They call it glass with straw. You can decide what's inside. I say it's a milkshake.
Leo, what would the perfect Leo emoji be?
What would it be?
Well, he already got the middle finger. Let's see. I don't know. Listen to my show. I don't know. I don't know what it would be. Have you guys, your guys are all Twitter verified. You got the blue check, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you can meet other people with blue checks. It's a dating app for verified Twitter users called Blue.
Wow, that's a terrible idea.
It's free to join if you're verified. It's rolling out to San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, London, and Tokyo. It's only going to go live once it has 1,000 local members in your neighborhood. Only 150,000 people have the blue check mark on Twitter. And most of them come from the world of journalism and media.
Exactly.
Do you really want to meet us?
No, you don't. You don't.
actual celebrities, TechCrunch points out, like Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift, probably don't need to date using their Twitter verified status. But it's, you know, hey, it's an interesting idea. So it's from the same folks who brought you Love Flutter, which is another, I think, Twitter. Twitter dating.
I don't even want to know what that is.
I want to sign up for Blue by Love Flutter, but I'm not on the market, and I just want to see what it, you know, like, could you even meet anybody that way? But I know if I signed up for it, it wouldn't go over well in my house. Date verified Twitter users. Twitter verified, get Blue free. Lisa is not verified. She can't get verified. Even though she's the CEO of a major media company.
Behind the camera instead of in front of it.
It bugs the hell out of her.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's. I think ostensibly the reason they have verified users is because people imitate your name. And I petitioned them, actually. I was unverified for a long, long time.
There is a form now.
There is. And even the first time I filled it out, they ignored it. And then I sent them the list of the other Mike Elgins using my profile picture, and there was dozens of them.
Right.
I'm like, look at this. This is why you have
verified.
And then they verified me.
Oh, that worked.
Yeah, I think that they I was a real Twitter basher for a long time, and I always suspected that they withheld the verification for that reason. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then eventually I just demonstrated there are just all these people using my name and profile picture, and so...
Yeah. So this is... You can now date celebrities discreetly. Because you've got a blue check mark.
And journalists.
Mostly journalists. The safest dating community ever. Do you know what's going on in the tech community these days? Twitter blue tick, you're in. This is so silly. You know, I'm sure this isn't really about dating. This is about mining something.
This is about creating an exclusive club and using it in a different way.
That's what I think.
This is about changing the gene pool.
Yeah.
For the worse. What if the world were populated only by descendants of blue tick holders?
It'd be like Gattaca, but you'd have to be verified on Twitter instead of
Twitter says it's taking action against 10 times the numbers of accounts it did just a year ago, the abusive accounts. And it's working.
Do we sense that it's working? Any of us?
You know, I was listening to an interview with, what's his name? The guy that you were talking about a couple of weeks ago, Kamel Nanjiani, right? The guy in Silicon Valley, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
And his new movie, The Big Sick.
Yeah.
And he said, he was talking about Twitter, he said, this was on Fresh Air, he said, I don't read my at replies, and I highly recommend everybody turn on the quality filter. Yeah. The problem, that probably works, he doesn't see anything.
Right.
But the problem with that is he doesn't see, for me, I can't do it, but for him, I guess he doesn't care if somebody's saying bad things about him. But I kind of like to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dinesh in the Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Yeah. And
we're going to go see that movie tonight, by the way. That, Jeff? You were singing its praises. The Big Sick.
Which one?
The Big Sick.
Big Sick. I liked it a lot. It a lot. And of course, there was kind of a PC response and that South Asian women aren't presented as well because they're the foils in the comedy plot. It's kind of inevitable, but I think it's really good.
I like it. Sort of their story, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Emily V. Gordon.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. No, it's charming and fun, and it was great.
Charlie Ward.
Are you going to go see?
Go ahead.
Dunkirk.
Who?
Dunkirk. Are you going to go see Dunkirk?
I saw Dunkirk.
And?
Oh, you did? Oh, already. What'd you think?
Okay, Leo. No spoilers.
I knew
no
was spoilers. Just about to say. Well, I don't want to say how it ends. Yeah, it's very good. I like Christopher Nolan. He likes to play with time, so there's it jumps around in time a little bit, which I think might confuse people who aren't familiar with Inception and his other movies. Right. But I thought it was really good. Yeah, it's very well done. It's it's a very important story of World War II, but a very small slice of World War II's history, and I thought it was very well done. Yeah, the Germans win, but only briefly.
I saw Wonder Woman for the first time last night.
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, really?
Claire
Underwood
good?
Is fantastic in it.
Claire Underwood's in it?
Yeah,
I
Princess
love Claire
Bride.
Underwood.
Yeah, she's Jenny. She's fantastic.
Yeah, Jenny from the Hood.
Yeah.
I love... Wait, we veered all over the place with that one. I love Claire Underwood, yeah. Twitter says that it's getting better, but Charlie Wartzel writing in BuzzFeed News says it's not getting any better.
Yeah,
there's as much rude stuff as ever.
It actually might have gotten better in terms of their tools and worse because of the election. So I've noticed that a lot of the vitriol and stupidity is all around the new president.
There's a lot of that.
And I don't know if you saw a series of articles that basically talked about how people are trying to get into the first repliers after
the
president
tweets. Yes, because they figure the president will see it.
I started that.
Have you been blocked yet?
I have been blocked by the president.
Yeah.
And so, I'm so proud of it.
Yeah.
I should get another Twitter badge for that, I think.
I got blocked by Donald Trump Jr., but I'm still trying to get up to Donald Trump Sr.
You haven't been blocked yet, huh?
Yeah.
No.
You blocked Chrissy Teigen
the
other day.
Follows me.
Yeah.
Perseverance, that's the key, Jeff. But anyway, I wrote this article for Medium some time ago saying if you reply within the first 3 seconds, then the president won't see it, but his fans will see it. And it's a way to reach it, to go across the bubbles. And then Recode picked it up and they published my Medium post. And then BuzzFeed did a thing referencing the Recode article. And lots and lots of people are doing it now. It's like the new thing. And but here's another interesting.
BuzzFeed says it really, unless you're a celebrity or a journalist, you're not going to get any satisfaction if you report somebody on Twitter.
Absolutely. And that's the problem. This is the problem with Twitter. They're bragging about how their system is better, but they still don't let people delete replies. They have to be able to let people delete replies.
This is the key.
And they want to maintain control. So you can beg and plead, and they'll basically, like you just said, Leo, they will listen to you or not listen to you based on who you are. It's really a kind of a bad system.
Yeah, that's some really bad example.
The Associated Press just put out a tweet that Twitter is now going crazy over. The AP has deleted a tweet about a giraffe being born because it included a photo of the wrong giraffe. A new tweet is upcoming.
Fake news.
Fake news. People are loving that. They're loving that.
But how can you tell one giraffe from another? They all look the same.
I'm not going to stick my neck out.
No, I shouldn't say that. It's racist.
Oh.
All giraffes look the same.
But, okay. but I do have a prepared statement about this whole area where people say fake news. Fake news providers do not issue retractions. They don't issue apologies. Right. They don't do corrections. They deliberately say fake things, and then they spread it more. And that's the difference. So you can't criticize CNN, for example, as fake news when they fire the people who did it, issue an apology, all that stuff. That's not what fake news organizations do. So somebody's issuing a correction or retraction, is not fake
news. If you want to read a really depressing article, read Charlie Wartzell's article in BuzzFeed News about Twitter. And there's plenty of examples, not for the queasy, for the weak of
So what
stomach.
Should they do? What should we've discussed this over the years, and I've always said that I love the open Twitter, and the open Twitter enables people to start revolutions. But is Twitter responsible? If Google and Facebook are each starting to account for quality more, which they say they're starting to do, and I see it happening, Twitter does not at all. Should Twitter?
I'm not sure exactly what the question is, but they make themselves responsible because of the way that they do reporting. That's on the fake news side. And in making the content better, they're doing that through algorithms, which is another bad thing. So
so impossible. Right. So the problem is their default is always to not take it down because they're Twitter.
Right.
And pretty much Facebook's default is that too, but Facebook can then stop promoting it. So at least that helps.
Yeah.
But should Twitter should Twitter enact a more a policy that enables people who complain to get stuff taken down, or is that counter to the internet and Twitter ethos?
They need to set up mechanisms so that it's self policing in a way. To the greatest extent possible. If they are the ones
It'll get gamed.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Right? Right.
And then they have
bot
to
armies
that.
Will come in and complain about you, Mike Elgin, and you're doomed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's problematic because they basically have policies that, if you're threatening somebody, you get booted or whatever. If certain, they added racism, some other things. But like, what is racism? I reported a whole bunch of people for racism on Twitter and nothing happens. And, it's different ideas around the world about what that it means, but you should be able to craft your own sort of social space on all of these places and have the replies be under the control of the person who did the post that people are replying to. And again, I'm broken record on this issue, but that's really the key thing. That's Facebook lets you do it. Google Plus lets you do it. Almost everybody lets you do it, but Twitter doesn't let you do it. Twitter themselves at the corporate level want to maintain personal control over who gets booted, who you see, who you don't see, and all that kind of stuff through both algorithms and also the reporting system.
Just to be clear, somebody in the chat room, some idiot in the chat room said, this Twitter harassment thing boils down to this. These journalists and celebs are used to saying something and having it be gospel. They hate being talked back to, especially by the unwashed masses. But that's not what we're talking about.
No.
We're not saying
not at all.
We want to have criticism banned or disagreement banned.
Right.
We're saying vile threats against your person should be the person should be banned. It's not.
So we have to reach, we want to recapture civility.
It doesn't even have to be civil. I don't care if somebody's uncivil.
Well,
look at this Charlie Wartzell article and see if you think. I'm not showing it now. See if you think those tweets. I'm not going to show them on the air. Are somehow valid criticism. If somebody says, I have this gun and I'm coming to your house and has a picture of him with the gun, that's valid criticism? Hell no.
Well,
that's a threatening tweet, and the guy's account should be taken down.
But again, these threats are, as soon as they successfully ban explicit threats, then they figure out they're always testing the limits. So it's like
they learn where the edges are. Well, that's fine. If they stay within the edges, that's fine.
Right. You should be knifed. Is that different from I'm going to knife you? I mean, is it? I mean, it's like. It's a fine line.
So here's part of what I think is happening in society. There are these pictures. Somebody last week tweeted a montage of photos of those various people in various parts of the country who did things like scream horrible racist things at kids' birthday parties in parks.
Yeah.
And somebody, God bless, on the internet videos them and shames them online. And the next thing you see is them crying their eyes out in court. And I realize it's as if they got transported from a land of fear and hate back to civilization. But the question is, do you have to go that far overboard to reclaim your civility, to reclaim decency, to reclaim your sense of humanity? Or do we intervene before that?
By the way, Twitter's quarterly results come out tomorrow. We'll find out if any of this affects the bottom line. The only thing the stock market cares about is how many people use Twitter.
Right. I mean, how many hours you spend.
And this is the reason why there's no incentive for Twitter to do anything about this. Because as long as they show growth and there's more people on it, they don't care what those people are saying on it or how they're acting on it.
Right.
Twitter said last quarter they had 328 million users, just as a benchmark. You could see how that, if it's up or down, that's how Twitter's stock will be. It's currently, Twitter's stock is up 41% since its low in April. So people believe in Twitter. Not sure why. I think because of the president, frankly. I think if you didn't have Donald, I don't know if there'd be anything exciting about Twitter these days.
Twitter is mostly
he's done more for Twitter than
you bet.
Probably anything in the last few years, sure.
The funny thing is that it's really not him. It's the media that has made his Twitter account the center of attention.
But when he makes, as he did this morning,
announces
on Twitter and nowhere else that they're going to ban transgender people from the military.
Yeah.
That's how he makes his executive order.
Exactly.
That makes Twitter extremely important.
But it's important.
But it doesn't matter what the media says.
No, it's only the media that's making it into the phenomenon that it is. Let me give you an example. Former President Barack Obama has massively more followers than the president does, even the combined POTUS and real Donald Trump accounts. And his average tweet gets far more engagement, far more sharing, far more likes, all that stuff. And nobody ever even talks about it because it's all just bland.
Yeah, he's not the president of the United States.
But when he was, it's all bland, like, you know, it's nothing unpredictable.
I see what you're
saying. And so the media doesn't talk about his tweets. They ignore his tweets. But the media is the thing that amplifies Trump's tweets.
I never saw Obama's speech to the Boy Scouts or George W's or George H.W.'s because it was bland, pablum, you know, be good citizens, go out there. So, but that's where Trump is really excellent at entertaining.
Well, here's how I look at it.
For want of a better word.
Here's how I look at it. Trump talks about how he hates the media. He loves the media. The media is his instrument, and Twitter is how he plays the media.
Yeah.
I mean, this is his lever.
No, and he's a master of it.
But it's
not just Twitter. I got to tell you, he's a master of media manipulation in general. In every way.
He uses his speeches and rallies and also Twitter mostly to get the media to cover him incessantly.
Right.
But again, he's not having the impact on Twitter. He's having the impact through Twitter on the media.
Okay. So and you don't think he's a benefit to Twitter and that stock price?
I don't think he should be. I do think he is. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, he gets every media outlet to talk about Twitter, for starters. I mean, that's really
that's all I'm saying.
Phenomenon is,
if it weren't for Donald Trump, I don't know if Twitter's stock price would be up 41% since April. I doubt it would be.
I don't doubt that at all. You're absolutely right about that.
Google study says that I was surprised that this number was so low. Ransomware victims have paid out more than $25 million since last year. I would have thought it had been a lot higher.
Yeah.
But
all the hype given to it.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it's over
but,
2 years.
I think for reality.
Yeah. No, maybe that's it. Yeah, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe ransomware is overhyped. And
well, some ransomware ask for small amounts. Some ransomware, the mechanism that they use to threaten is broken. So, like, right. Even if you tried to pay, that doesn't work.
Right.
And then a lot of people just don't pay it for one reason or another. So.
So on Windows Weekly earlier today, Paul Thurrott, pick of the week, Kaspersky antivirus, the free version. Kaspersky is the Russian antivirus company. It still is a very good antivirus. I don't have anything wrong with the antivirus. Mm-hmm. But there's some question about Eugene Kaspersky and the company itself. Right. In fact, there seemed to be a smoking gun in emails uncovered by, I think, Bloomberg Businessweek. That showed that Kaspersky, the company, worked for the FSB, the Russian security firm that had written software for the for Russian government.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious what you guys think. Aaron, would you install free software from Kaspersky?
No, not at this point.
Let alone, I mean, we can set aside the dubious value of an antivirus these days.
Yeah.
Yes.
But let's say.
Yeah, I get asked that question all the time with all the latest news about these things. Is, oh, which antivirus thing should I install? A VAT?
No.
Should I?
And
it's like, no. Just keep Windows up to date and run that if you're running Windows.
Yeah. Or use a Chromebook. That's
fine.
Right.
Jeff said or use that. A Chromebook yeah. Or run yeah. Linux. Yeah. How about that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on the guy if he's innocent.
I mean, I've met Kaspersky.
Everybody loves this. This is, by the way, why he
he's
gets
very smart.
This is why he gets a lot of free pass from a lot of media. Everybody's met him. I haven't met him, but a lot of people met him. Paul's met him, and they love the guy.
Yeah, he's a real charmer.
I find charming people to be more suspicious myself.
Yes, yes.
I've always wondered about you. Port.
Oh, I'm a Russian spy for sure. I'm one of those
Frank Underwood. Frank Underwood,
sleeper.
Very charming.
You're a sleeper. Is what you
Frank
are.
Frank Underwood, very charming.
Isn't that a French
you're like,
name?
You're liking the Americans.
All right, I apologize, Eugene. What do you think, Jeff? You know him. Is he a Russian spy?
I might trust him personally, but I can't trust anything out of that country.
No. And Congress, by the way, has said nobody's to install Kaspersky products on any computer used. I think in the U.S. government, I would think.
And if you can't trust Congress's software recommendations, what can you trust?
Yeah. Well, they also, remember, they said, the Commerce Department said no Huawei or ZTE phones.
Yep.
Let's see. This is from July 5th. Congress casts a suspicious eye on Russia's Kaspersky Lab.
Casting Kaspersky.
Best Buy loads Kaspersky software on its computers. The Federal Bureau of Prisons uses Kaspersky. So do many state and local governments. Oh, NPR points out Kaspersky Lab is also among our financial supporters. But the House and Senate Armed Services Committee have approved legislation that would bar the U.S. military from owning or using any products made by Kaspersky. I don't know what the status of that law is at this point. Kaspersky Lab is used by hundreds of thousands, million, or if not millions of Americans, said Marco Rubio, to each of our witnesses, the six intelligence agency chiefs speaking to the Senate Intelligence Committee. To each of our witnesses, I would ask, would any of you be comfortable with a Kaspersky Lab software on your computer? Dan Coats, Director of National Intelligence. A resounding no for me. Mike Rogers, NSA director. No. CIA director Mike Pompeo. No, Senator. FBI, acting FBI director Andrew McCabe. No, sir. Defense Intelligence Agency director Lieutenant General Vincent Stewart. No, Senator. And to get it unanimous, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency director. I'm glad we have one of those.
Yes.
Robert Cardillo. No, sir.
So, if it was open source, maybe, you know, because
right.
Then you could take a look at it, yeah. Right? But that's why we need open source software for this kind of stuff. You can take a look at the code and make sure it's okay.
And this was before Kaspersky was offering a free copy to every American. I don't know. You know, it could go both ways. It could be he wants to, you know, make nice and say, look, I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
It could be, hey, use free software. Please take two. I don't know. Could be. We don't know.
I think if there is any nefarious relationship with the Russian government, how that would most likely play out is that they would have special access to information from that company. I mean, I don't think it's going to be malware on everybody's devices, turning on the camera and beaming it back to Moscow. I really don't see that happening. But I do.
What if, though? What if it had a Trojan built into it that
could be activated?
Could be activated in a case of
during the invasion.
When the invasion happens.
Red Dawn type of scenario.
I'm ready.
You got your bunker.
My bunker.
You have an alternative antivirus.
Lisa won't let me get a gun, though. She says, you'll shoot your eye out. She won't. She has a gun, but I'm not allowed to get one.
She likes that balance of power.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah. Maybe that's it. All right, let's take a break and get your tips and picks, boys and boys. Stacy, where is Stacy? She told us last week. Do you remember, Jeff? I think she's at an event. I feel like in Seattle, but I could be wrong.
Nobody knows.
Or maybe it's just. Oh yeah, she said she was going somewhere. I think Seattle, but it was just vacation.
Yeah, it was vacation.
Yeah, okay.
I forget where.
How dare she?
Good. Nobody can find Stacy. They don't know where she is. This is good for her.
Where in the world is Stacy Higginbotham? I know where Jeff Jarvis is. He's in Australia. And again, thanks to, what is it, the Sydney Technical?
University of Technology, Sydney.
University of Technology, Sydney.
UTS.
For letting us use the studio. And a great big thanks to Jeff Jarvis for getting up early in the morning to be on this show.
That's the best stream we've ever had out of Jeff.
It's very high quality, I must say.
Yeah, it's very high quality.
Has the sound thing been fixed?
We're getting a little echo back. I don't know. I think it's not you. It's the software. It has nothing to do with what's University of Technical stuff. Also with us, Mike Elgin. Highly recommend you visit Mike's site and find out about the digital nomadic life.
Gastronomad.net.
Actually, yes, it's gastronomad.net now. So you can sign up for the Gastronomad event coming up in September. You still have room?
We still do. We have interested parties circling, but anybody wants to grab it, there's one spot
first
for a couple
come, first serve.
Left.
Yeah. Mike Elgin's Skype, somebody says, is so good it looks like you're there in the studio. Isn't that amazing? What quality.
Yeah. It's incredible.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Technology.
And also with us, Aaron Newcomb, and you can follow his work on the Twitter. Yeah, we have your Twitter handle on here. That's what you wanted, right?
Yeah, Twitter's fine. Well, I'm Aaron Newcomb everywhere. So everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus. Just type in Aaron Newcomb, you'll find me.
AaronNewcomb. The B is silent. Or is it?
It is silent.
Okay. It's sort of there.
Sometimes spelled with an E.
Newcombe. Our show today brought to you by my fine mattress. A good night's sleep. See, Jeff, you need this. A good night's sleep. On a Casper mattress. Casper's an online retailer of premium mattresses designed and made in the U.S. of A. They're revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting out the middleman. No more do you have to deal with resellers or spend that money on the markup there. You don't have to worry about a showroom. And they pass the savings right on to you. Now, wait, you may say, wait, Leo, wait a minute. Hold on there. I can't try before I buy. Well, sort of you can. Because when you go to Casper.com/twig and you buy a wonderful Casper mattress, and trust me, you will love it. Here's mine, arriving in a very compact box. I already have my jammies on. I really like this mattress. You have 100 nights to sleep on it. And if at any time in the first 100 nights you say, yeah, it's okay, but it's not great, or I want a different one or whatever, you just call them. They come, they take it away, and they refund you every penny. So really, you do get to try before you buy. Well, you have to buy it, but you get to try. And if you don't like it, your money 100% refunded. It is awesome. And it
I'm
really.
I'm glad Casper's back in the rundown just to be able to watch this ad. I love this ad. This is native advertising the way it's meant to be.
Yeah. For those of you not watching on video, there's now a slow motion video of me falling into my Casper. And pretty soon, Ozzy, the late Ozzy, the dog,
Leo,
will show up.
Leo,
he likes it too.
Do you actually wear pajamas?
Actually, I do. I don't wear those, though.
Those are just for media.
I usually just wear, underwear. I don't have professional pajamas like you. But Casper, I don't know if they sell pajamas. They certainly sell mattresses. They are a wonderful kind of mattress. It's a combination of supportive memory foams that gives you, I don't know how they do it, just the right sink. So your knobby bits, you know, are supported. They sink in. But then just the right amount of firmness.
Just trying to picture what the knobby.
Whatever your knobby bits, mine are my hips, right? Uh-huh. Because I sit on my side and I want them to sink in.
Yeah.
But I don't want to, I'll get a sore back if the mattress is too soft. So it's weird, but it's perfect. It's just right. Both supportive and soft. I don't know how to describe it. And it's, by the way, highly breathable. Smell it. Now, some mattresses, you have to air them out for like a week when you get it. This one, used it right away. There was no odor. It's wonderful. It's great for these hot summer nights. It's really cool. Long-lasting comfort and support. And you can buy it online and completely risk-free.
And I have to add also, there's a lot of emphasis on sleeping, but I like to work in bed.
I do too.
And
you know what I bought? I highly recommend it. The Casper is flexible, doesn't have springs.
Right.
So you can get one of those motors underneath it that raises the head up or the feet up.
And that works.
Yeah, it works great. It works better with a Casper than it would with any other mattress because it's flexible, right?
Yeah, it just wouldn't work with a regular mattress.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it couldn't. You'd break it.
Right.
So the Casper, it's perfect. And then you can type.
Yeah.
And
that's
you're
cool.
Sitting, I love it. I do. I work in bed now.
Yeah.
Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada and now the U.K. Good news for those of you listening in the U.K. People complain because they say, I want one. Go to the Casper mattress site today and you'll save an additional $50 when you use the offer code TWIG. It's Casper, CASPER.com/TWIG. And the offer code is TWIG, TWIG. Terms and conditions apply. Casper.com/TWIG. Save $50 on your brand new Casper. They don't call it Casper the Friendly Mattress, but
they should.
All right, Mike, you're our visiting celebrity.
Okay.
You got a couple of things here.
I do.
No, it's just two different URLs.
It's basically, there's a company called Hunter, and they have a new thing called Tech Lookup. This is an alternative search engine, and this is at techlookup.hunter.io. And what this does, this is a really fascinating thing. This is great for web developers, but probably for any curious geek. What it does is it enables you to search websites by technology. They have 115 technologies. And these are not just technologies, but branded
what do you
plugins.
Mean, technology used?
For example, if they use Amazon EC2 or Amazon S3
It can
or
tell
Apache.
What they're using.
Exactly. Or if it's Blogger, if they have Twitter plugins, if they have Google Charts in there, if they're using Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby, if they have widgets from Facebook or Outbrain, if they're
How
using
about if they use New Relic?
You can give it a try, but basically you search for the technology and then you download it into a basically a spreadsheet, and you have all the companies and all the websites and the URLs that are using these technologies.
You'll be glad to know, Aaron, 121,000 websites use New Relic. That's more than that.
Yeah, I was looking that up too.
That's the ones, and we're in them. So you can't say, what is I wish we could say, what technologies is twit.tv using? But it doesn't work that way. But
if you know one of the technologies, they should show up on the list, and it'll be a long list. So this is something that's interesting to certain types of geeks.
Yeah.
If you're not one of those types of geeks, this company has their older product is fantastic, and I use it all the time. It's basically an email finder. The best implementation of it is a Chrome browser plugin, and you can get this one at hunter.io. It's a Chrome plugin, and then you go to a website and it gives you a button. So if you're at a website, you click the button, it'll show you all the email addresses associated with that domain.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it gives you, it ranks them
this
according to
this is a hacker's
how,
dream.
Oh, yeah. And you can, and it'll rank them according to how many references they find on the internet for those email addresses. So you can find the CEO's address and the customer service very quickly with a single button.
Oh, I do like that. That's Hunter.io.
That's right. And it's free. And I've been using it for a long time. I use it to contact sources.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Would-be sources.
Yeah.
And it works great. And I love that plugin. One click and you just see a long list of all the email addresses.
So I could enter twit.tv and then find all the associated email addresses?
And
they're all blurred out. I know what they are.
You notice that the 20 sources is this one. This one's 20.
Yeah, where are they getting those from?
They're references online. They're finding these on the internet. And they're saying, oh, yeah, they're we found 13 examples of that particular one that we're looking at.
Tickets at twit.tv. Here's all the names of the hosts.
Once you create the free account, then it'll unblur them, I guess.
Yeah, they're blurred. And I'm only seeing a handful of them. There's 78 total. Yeah. Well, I'll vouch for this. These are all real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Fantastic.
That is very useful. I can see. Yeah. I can see how you'd use that. Jeff Jarvis, a number for us?
So, yeah, I like this one. Remember 11 years ago, I think we on the show, how long has the show been on?
Oh, probably that long. I don't know. Let's see. Well, this is episode 415.
I think we all gasped.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we gasped when Google bought YouTube for $1.65 billion.
No, we weren't doing this show when that happened.
No, we weren't. Okay.
But I would. I did gasp, but I don't think we were doing this show.
Everybody gasped.
We all got gasped.
Now, CNBC, a tech analyst named Victor Anthony said on CNBC that he estimates that if YouTube were stock on its own, it would be worth $75 billion.
Yeah. And I would say Google definitely got its money's worth.
They did fine.
Yeah.
It's worth five Twitters, or it's a 45X on the investment.
Wow.
And it was all stock.
Sweet.
So
our first episode was August 1st, 2009.
Oh,
so
okay. I thought so. I just thought I had this memory of us saying, ha, 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 1.65 billion. I must have said it somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's called false memory syndrome.
We all did it.
It is. It is.
So let's see. August 1st is coming up. You know, this actually really is the last episode of our eighth year. Next episode will be the beginning of our ninth year.
Nice.
Wow, it's right. That doesn't seem possible.
Aren't you sick of me yet?
This is so happy birthday. This is really our eighth anniversary.
We should get some
our ninth birthday.
Paper hats and confetti.
Wow. I'm glad you asked that, Jeff. I mean, August 1st is just a few days away.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thunk it? What were we talking about?
FCC investigates Apple. Hey, we're thinking about doing a show about Google.
why not?
Sure. What the heck? Yeah.
We were FCC investigates Apple and AT&T over Google Voice app block. Why free works and using canned responses in Gmail. And just out of curiosity, I'm just wondering how long the show was.
Now Google does.
54 minutes.
must have been a long time ago.
Those were the days, my friends. But you know what we still have? We've never in 9 years gotten rid of?
That horrid music.
Horrible theme song.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
This week in Google is provided.
The only reason it's still there is I never hear it.
Right.
If we had a band, if we had a studio band playing it, I would know what it is. This week in
Google. You throw tomatoes at them.
First, 2009.
Lots of people like it.
It wouldn't be a band playing it. It would be traveling minstrels.
This show is brought to you by.
You know why I picked it? A, because I could get it. I paid the royalty for it. But B, because it was going to be you, me, and Gina Terpani, right, Jeff? And I thought, I wanted a fugue because it was going to be like a counterpoint, a contrapuntal arrangement between you and then I would say something and then Gina and we would interweave like that. And so I tried to find something that was a fugue.
Can you say contrapuntal on this show?
sounds wrong. Edit that out.
Yeah. That's.
We're going to get an adult tag.
unnecessary censorship.
Did you do your number? That was the YouTube purchase point price and what it would be worth. $75
billion.
No, that's a good one. That's a good one.
It's also interesting that the parental control app on Google has a number that causes a problem.
What number?
13.
What?
Because what was it here? Oh,
which
where was
the
that?
Age you have to be?
That's the COPPA age. Of the age of consent under the Child Online Protection
I block
and Privacy
so many
Act.
Kids on Google Plus. There's so many kids under the age of 13. And I post some picture of some beautiful food, and people are like, that looks amazing. That looks delicious. And then somebody's like, yuck, that's gross. And I look at the thing, and it's like a 9-year-old.
If you sign up for Family Link, that's Google's new parental controls. Right. I didn't even know they had this. At the age of 13, a child can choose to graduate. In other words, the parent doesn't decide. Hmm. The kid decides.
That's weird.
That's the age of majority in Google land.
Yeah.
That's weird. The minute you're a teenager, bye-bye restrictions. I don't know if that's so bad. I don't think that's so bad. What do you think?
Well, if it overrules the parents. The parents are still in charge until 18.
But
right?
I think Google doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, right.
That's an interesting choice.
Hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, it seems young.
It's for Android phones only. Don't go looking for it on the internet. Well, certainly, I think parents should assert some control over kids until they're 18.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I've tried it. It doesn't work.
Well, I use the controls, the parental controls built into the router I use, one of our sponsors, Eero.
Yeah.
And Michael's 14, and they're filters on all his devices.
Hmm.
But, you know, kids could get around it because he has a phone. If he really wanted to, he can get around it.
Yeah.
Aaron Newcomb, what do you got for us?
Well, this is something that's not new. It was new to me last night when I was doing some research. I don't know, Leo, have you tried out any of the 8-bit dough controllers?
No, I have a Switch and I love my Switch.
I do too. I love my Switch as well.
But I use the stock controllers. What is 8-bit dough?
So 8-bit dough has been making these controllers for years that are very popular among folks like me that like to build their own arcade controllers, for example, or do emulation because they make these controllers that look kind of like, in some cases, exactly like the old controllers.
That's so funny.
They're Bluetooth controllers, and they work with just about anything, Android, Windows, Mac, Linux, Raspberry Pi. They'll work with anything. And they're fairly inexpensive. They look good. They're fairly inexpensive. They usually come with a case. They're well-built. So anyway, they're pretty popular, especially in the emulation crowd. And they released at E3, they released a new controller and they said, this one's going to come with the right version of the Bluetooth so that it will work with Nintendo Switch. Everybody really was excited about that. And at the time I was like, okay, this is all just software though. Why don't they make this available for all their other controllers? Because they're not changing the hardware, right? They're just doing something in software. And lo and behold, that's exactly what they did.
Oh.
So if you have one of these 8-bit dough controllers, if you've bought one and you want to use it with your Nintendo Switch, you can. All you have to do now is upgrade your firmware to version 4.0. And almost all of their controllers are now compatible with Nintendo Switch. So if you don't necessarily have to go out and get the game controller that you can buy specifically for Nintendo Switch, you can use one of these 8-bit dough controllers. I've got the one that looks like the old NES controller, except they've added a couple buttons and some shoulder buttons so you can actually use it with the Switch more effectively. But yeah, good news for people that have these controllers, and they're fun because they're retro, you know?
Somebody in the chat room is saying, how's the D-pad on these? They feel good? Do you have
Yeah,
one?
They feel great.
Okay.
They don't feel cheesy. Yeah, I've got a... No, not at all. I mean, they're not the highest end quality, but they're pretty nice. The buttons are solid. They're responsive. The analog sticks are pretty good. So, yeah, I mean, I would highly recommend them. They've been doing some really cool stuff. They come in a fantastic box. They've done really good. I mean, it seems weird to say that, but the packaging is actually really nice.
$42 for the NES 30. Mm-hmm. That's not cheap for something like that. So they should be good. Those should be good switches and all that.
Yeah, you can see there. They even come with a little keychain, which is interesting.
Yeah. It's the wrong controller.
They're trying. Yeah, they're trying. But I would highly recommend them, and especially now that you can get support to make them work with the Nintendo Switch.
Nice.
Yeah, be great.
That's awesome. Friends, we've come to the end of another fine, a thrilling, gripping edition of This Week in Google.
It's 3 episodes in one.
It was. How so?
Well, it's just longer than we used to be.
Oh, my God. It's 4:07. Yeah, that's really
true.
Yeah,
I'm going to miss my ferry.
All right. Go get your ferry. Thank you, Aaron Newcomb. See you soon. Take care.
Yes, I'll be around.
Run to the ferry. Run.
I will.
Okay.
We'll see you.
And, Jeff, the good news is it's brunch time.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
He's going
BuzzMachine.com. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it, Jeff. Always appreciate
thank you.
It. Mike
thank
Elgin.
Thank the crew for trying to fix the technology problems.
It wasn't bad. You know, you sound
Pig
fine.
Pen. Does it sound okay now?
Oh, it sounds better. Yeah. We're just being picky. There's a little bit of echo, a little bit of.
There still is. We tried to change some settings.
It's not bad. Okay. Yes, yeah, it's not bad. And thanks, of course, to Mike Elgin. Always a
thank
pleasure
you.
To have
yeah.
you on.
Love this show.
Come back soon. How long have you been in the States? Not long.
I think it's another month or so.
Oh, okay.
Something like that, yeah.
Because
yeah,
you got to get
yeah
back to
Barcelona. Yeah. Yep.
Thank you for being here. You should, everybody, gastronomad.net if you haven't yet signed up.
Thank
and
you.
Put me down for Italy. I'm not kidding. I really want to do that.
You've got a spot reserved, two spots nice reserved.
Prosecco.
Yes.
We're coming to Prosecco.
I hope you like cheese.
It'll be like a cheese. I do like cheese.
Yeah. Mike?
We're going to make
cheese. Just the first two. Actually, have you announced a date for Fez?
No, no. Fez is, doesn't have a date yet. So the only one with a solid date is Barcelona.
Why not? Immediately. When they announce Italy, can why not you and Mrs. Jarvis join us?
That would be awesome.
Well, yeah. So, you know, Mike, you know what I'd love to see is why don't you put up, even before you have dates, put up what you're planning just so we can kind of plan.
So they
ahead
do have the Fez.
Absolutely,
I think they talk about Fez, yeah.
Absolutely will do. We've got all the people lined up for Italy, but not the dates. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, great.
Roughly place spring next year?
Roughly.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think we have a Japan trip planned in March.
Oh, really?
Or April.
Nice.
Oh. I wanted to see the Cherry Blossom Festival.
Nice.
If it doesn't coincide with that, we'll definitely, I'd love to do Italy.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do This Week in Google roundabout 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC on Wednesdays, right after Windows Weekly. I hope you come by and watch live. If you do, visit us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. If, on the other hand, your schedule does not permit, don't worry. It's okay. We got on-demand audio and video available at our website for all our shows, twit.tv. In this case, it'll be twit.tv/twig. You can even go back to episode 1 from 9 years ago, 8 years ago. Wow. Wow. It was only audio, I think, back then. I don't think we were doing video.
Yeah, it was audio.
Yeah.
I think we did about episode 3, we did video.
We pretty quickly went to video.
Very
yeah
quickly.
That was right about the transformation. Let's see, what else? On-demand versions at the website or subscribe. You should use, you know, your favorite podcast application and subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. And we will see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.